Also, thank you for giving me part of your day. And remember, we change tomorrow by changing today, and we have to. We have to, because tomorrow really matters. So tell a friend, and stay tuned now for the Peter B. Collins Show, which is coming up next after the CBS News.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. There are things Republican John McCain says both he and Barack Obama might want to avoid in their coming debates.
All the gimmicks, the phony sound bites and photo ops, campaigns that always seem to be more about the candidates' interests than the public's. And I hope that Senator Obama agrees.
McCain proposes town hall-style debates, 10 of them across the nation, with the first coming in New York at Federal Hall in 8 days. For Barack Obama and John McCain, the next big question, who to bring to the ticket as a running mate? Obama has asked Caroline Kennedy to join two other confidants to develop a short list of candidates. Bill Nichols at Politico.com.
Caroline Kennedy, if you're Obama and you can get her to play any sort of substantial role in your campaign, that's a net plus. I think this is also reaching out to perhaps some women who may have bruised feelings over Hillary Clinton not being the nominee.
I'm Dan Revive with findings from a CBS News poll. Basic question to around 1,000 voters nationwide. If the election were today, who'd get your vote? Obama, 48%. McCain, 42%. A six-point lead for Obama, but the statistical margin of error on each number is 4 points. This is unusual. More than 1 out of 5 Hillary Clinton supporters say they'll vote for McCain.
Major airlines are raising fares dramatically out of their big hubs.
Chicago to Charleston, South Carolina last summer on United nonstop, $178. This summer, $730, or a 310% increase.
Tom Parsons at bestfares.com says, you want to save money? Pick flights with one or more stops on the way. A pharmaceutical company, Allergan, says it has an experimental drug for your eyelashes. Take the drug, your eyelashes get longer.
We plan to file between now and the end of September, a new product leads to longer, darker, and thicker eyelashes.
Chief Executive David Pyott says they're best known for Botox, so it's good for marketing. The drug, by the way, Lumigan, is already used as a treatment for glaucoma. Instead of putting drops in the eye, just dab it on the eyelids, and presto, lashes grow longer. California has such a drought, Governor Schwarzenegger's declared it an emergency.
I stand ready to declare a state of emergency anywhere it is needed to protect public health and safety.
Some communities are already rationing water. Sounded kind of like D.C. fireworks until the torrent began.
Looked like something out of a horror film. I thought I was going to die because my truck was moving sideways.
Tornadoes reported but not confirmed in the area. The skies got dark today as twilight with an energy that said go inside, away from the windows. One person killed, hundreds of thousands are without power there in the greater D.C. area. On Wall Street, the Dow was off just 12 points today, the Nasdaq up 22. Oil prices, $122.30 a barrel, down $2. This is CBS News.
Imagine all the possibilities for your next painting project. Now imagine saving up to 25%, too. From June 5th through the 9th is the Summer Savings Event at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams Paint Store. Save up to 25% on exceptional Sherwin-Williams paints, stains, wall coverings, and more. But don't wait. Hurry in and save, only at Sherwin-Williams. For painting, decorating, and great savings. At Sherwin-Williams. For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Ha! Look at that!
What?
The Nuvi. This is precisely why I subscribed to MSN Direct when I bought this Garmin Nuvi 780.
What is it?
A traffic backup right there on our route.
What do we do?
We avoid it.
How?
The Nuvi simply directs us to the best alternate route, huh?
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
To receive MSN Direct traffic content, you must be within its coverage area. For details, navigate to Garmin.com. Follow the leader.
A rally in Washington, D.C. had hopes of generating more interest in the idea that childhood immunizations cause some children to become autistic. CBS's Dr. John LaPook says it's really not likely.
This is an incredibly emotionally charged issue. Parents feel that maybe it was giving the vaccine that caused the autism. And, of course, because vaccines are given to so many kids, the odds are that if a kid develops autism around the age of two, that there is going to have been some recent immunization. But that doesn't mean that the vaccine caused the autism.
As the FDA has concluded, it is just tragic coincidence. Astronaut Relief has already been sucked safely out into space by the new toilet on the International Space Station. It had been 2 weeks since the station crew had a properly operating toilet. In the interim, it took more than one person to operate it, one in search of a necessary moment, the other to work the pump handle. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
The world calls us small business owners, but really,
there's nothing small about us. We have big ideas.
We see huge potential. We have
larger-than-life expectations, which is why we
and millions of other business owners use Visa Business.
Because we do business with a great big world and no other card.
No other card.
No other card is more accepted by it.
Visa Business, used for big ideas. Visit visa.com/smallbusiness.
This Father's Day, whether he's taking on a project or taking it easy, Ace can help your dad get the job done with expert advice and great deals. Choose from three DeWalt power tools for $54.99 each and get a $15 mail-in rebate for each one you buy. Ace Royal Paint, starting at the everyday low price of $19.99. Or pick up an Ace gift card Wednesday through Monday at Ace, the helpful place. Find your local Ace at acehardware.com. Prices good at participating Ace Hardware stores while supplies last. See store for details.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to a fresh edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Maybe I should just do the concession speech for Hillary.
Down the street, concentrating on truck and right, I heard a dark voice beside of me, and I looked round in a state of fright.
I saw four faces, one mat, a brother from the gutter. They looked me up and down a bit and turned to each other.
You know, I don't like reggae. I just wanted to get that out. I feel much better now.
I say I don't like reggae. I love it.
And I love doing this radio program. It keeps me out of the therapist's office down the hall. And thank you for being my therapeutic community. We've got a lot to talk about today. Great people to talk with. Paul Waldman will kick off the show in just a moment from MediaMatters.org. And Vincent Bugliosi, the man who put Charles Manson away as a prosecutor, has prepared a book, which is a brief, entitled The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. His appearance in part due to a request from listener Patrick in Monterey, a KRXA loyalist. But we're delighted to have him, and he's right here in our secret studio right now, lounging out on the porch. He'll be with us in about half an hour. Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi will join us later in the program. We're going to talk about Hillary's exit. He is a Clinton supporter. Also going to talk about the primary results here in California and more on the budget battle in Sacramento. Do you support a porn tax, John Garamendi? I will put that question to him today. And we're going to talk about the problems in China with Susan Shirk, who's published a book called China, Fragile Superpower. Of course, the recent quake, the quake lakes that it produced, and the potential for flooding have been top of the news. Also, the Chinese government is cracking down on those who want to protest the poor construction that led to the collapse of school buildings and other public facilities. And Susan Shirk also says that China may surprise us with progress on climate change issues. So that's all ahead. You can call the program anytime, and we invite you to participate. Just dial toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. And you can always email me. That's Peter at PeterBCollins.com. Paul Waldman is a senior fellow there at Media Matters. They're on the web at mediamatters.org. He's co-author with David Brock of Free Ride, McCain and the Media. It's out and very compelling. I hope you'll pick it up and read it. Paul, how are you today?
I'm good, Peter. How are you?
Are you feeling a little lighter that the democratic process seems to be winding down?
I think everyone is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of a relief in many ways. But it'll be interesting to see how all this plays out and when exactly Senator Clinton will acknowledge that Senator Obama has clinched the nomination. Some of us are a little puzzled about how she's operating these days, but we'll have to ride that out and see. I wanted to first up ask you about John McCain and his relationship with Phil Gramm. Now, Phil Gramm was a former senator from Texas. I almost said Enron. Actually, he represented Enron and Texas in the United States Senate. His wife was on the board of directors of Enron. And he has surfaced as John McCain's lead economic advisor. And in the time since he left the Senate, he's also been working for firms related to the mortgage meltdown and other problems in our economy. So how is he poised to provide leadership and counsel to John McCain on these critical issues of our floundering economy?
Yeah, well, when John McCain gets asked about the fact that he has said that, you know, he doesn't know very much about the economy and it's not something that he's really up on, one of the things that he says is, well, you know, I take advice from people like Phil Gramm, which made a lot of people who are familiar with Phil Gramm kind of shake their heads and say, excuse me? Phil Gramm was known when he was in the Senate as a kind of doctrinaire tax cutter and regulation slasher, and a lot of the things that he championed have had really pernicious effects. One of the things that he championed when he was in the Senate was deregulation of the energy markets, which is something with which people in California are pretty familiar. The main beneficiary of that was none other than Enron, on whose board Phil Gramm's wife Wendy served. And we saw what the effects were. The deregulation of those markets allowed Enron to manipulate the energy supply in California and led to the energy crisis that you had there a couple years ago. Most recently, Phil Gramm has been working for this Swiss bank, UBS. It's a gigantic bank, and has been lobbying on their behalf with regard to the mortgage crisis. And some of the banking deregulation that he championed when he was in the Senate, many people think contributed to the sort of freewheeling markets in mortgage-backed securities that led to the current mortgage crisis.
Mm-hmm. So one of those bills has his name on it. It's the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act, which allowed commercial and investment banks to merge, and it eviscerated that border, the frontier or the firewall, between banks that are regulated and have insured deposits and investment banks which don't and don't.
You're exactly right. And so, you know, this is his track record. And for Phil Gramm, you know, it's all about deregulation. And in a recent speech that McCain gave on the economy and the mortgage crisis, he talked about cutting regulations as though the problem wasn't that we don't have enough scrutiny of what the investment banks are doing. And but the problem, as far as McCain and Gramm seem to be concerned, is that there was too much scrutiny and too much oversight, and they want to cut regulations.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is kind of a constant argument between conservatives and progressives about the proper role of government. There are doctrinaire people like Gramm who think that any regulation is bad regulation, but if you, no matter where you stand, it's hard to argue that this was a situation in which we couldn't have benefited from some more regulation and some more scrutiny by government over what was going on. And now we're in this, you know, this vicious cycle where things keep getting worse and worse with the housing market, and it happened in large part because the investment banks were playing around with these mortgage-backed securities that they didn't have any, where they weren't assuming any of the risk, and they could just buy them and sell them and not care whether or not they were selling them to people who would actually be able to pay them back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's brought us to where we are today. But that's who John McCain is taking his economic advice from.
And, you know, I am I think I'm actually a bishop in the Universal Life Church, and I've been thinking of taking out papers to name Phil Gramm as a reverend, and then the media would actually pay attention to his ratings and negatively tag John McCain with them, would you say?
That's not a bad idea. Perhaps then McCain would actually get asked about what sort of advice Gramm is giving him.
Yeah.
Because I haven't seen him ask that question yet.
We're talking with Paul Waldman from MediaMatters.org. Visit their website. They keep the right-wing media honest by simply reporting what they say and giving you an opportunity to see it and react to it and analyze it a little bit. So, Paul, has the Scott McClellan phenom run its course in your view?
Well, maybe. I think that, you know, although it certainly got plenty of attention, I haven't seen too many reporters actually take what McClellan said to heart. I mean, in some senses, what he was arguing was something that was obvious to most of us all along, that the White House easily manipulated the press, and that the press, particularly in the run-up to the Iraq War, were enablers. They just went along with whatever the White House told them. They didn't raise the critical questions. But, you know, one of the things that we saw was reactions from a lot of reporters to McClellan, basically saying, oh, you know, what is he talking about? I saw that we have one item on our website about Mike Allen, who's one of the most influential reporters in Washington, used to be with the Washington Post. Now he's one of the leaders of the Politico. And he said that that McClellan was adopting the language of the left-wing haters because he said that the press was complicit and didn't ask the right questions in the run-up to the war, which anyone who was around at the time would take as completely obvious. But yet to some in the press, obviously, that idea is very threatening because, mm-hmm. you know, it's making the argument that they didn't do their jobs, which they didn't. And, you know, I think that over the last couple of years, Peter, you and I have touched on this a couple of times, that it really was one of the greatest failures of the American media in recent history. Mm-hmm. The way that they laid down for the White House before the war, didn't ask the questions that the public needed to have asked, and basically made themselves into part of the White House propaganda operation. McClellan was pointing out the obvious. It's just unusual because most of the people within this Bush White House are a fervent loyalist and would never admit such a thing. He's just pointing out what everyone who is honest about it would already say is true.
Mm-hmm. As you may have heard, Vincent Bugliosi is going to join us right after this segment, and he references Scott McClellan in his book even before McClellan's book was published and these revelations came out. So I think he'll be fascinated by some of this discussion. I have a question for you, and it's not a trick question. If you don't know the answer, there's no penalty. But you monitor more media outlets than I do. And I have been looking to find a reporter who has has asked Scott McClellan about the Downing Street memos. Have you found anybody who has asked him about that?
It's an excellent question, and the answer to that is no. I certainly haven't seen it if it's happened.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the Downing Street memo is something that the press has never had much interest in talking about.
Yeah.
So I don't think he has been asked that, but it would be interesting to see if he had.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that he's had exclusive interviews with just about everybody in television now, so we're hoping he gets to the radio food chain next, and that's one of the things I want to ask him about. The other is, you know, he talks about the culture in Washington and the constant campaign. But as I was watching him, and I refer to him as a message monkey, and he's changed his message, but he's still a monkey in my view, because he will stick to his talking point relentlessly. And, you know, one of the things that I see him as an excellent purveyor of is the soundbite. And when you saw Scott McClellan in the White House press room responding to questions, you could see that he was always imagining how what he was about to say was going to be edited and reduced to a soundbite. And so he would repeat the same things over and over again, knowing that if you don't say something, they can't use it. And it's that culture that I think he and the Bush team have been so successful at, because they have message discipline. And when it comes to editing out, you know, an excerpt of what they said, they're often very careful about not giving you something that you could use against them.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he's pretty good. He was always pretty good at that. And, you know, yes, he was basically sent out to lie on many occasions. And it just happens that on one occasion, when it came to the Valerie Plame case, he got a little mad about it. And that may be what led to him writing this book. He's certainly immersed in that culture. You know, there was an interesting article that was written in the New Republic by Jonathan Chait when McClellan was still press secretary that pointed out that the feeling among the press corps was about him was that he was basically a decent guy, and that when he was lying, which was all the time, you could tell that it sort of bothered him.
Mm-hmm.
And you could detect that in his manner, and that was the perception that the reporters had of him, whereas his predecessor, Ari Fleischer, was basically not a decent guy and would lie to you with a smile, and you could never tell whether he was lying or telling the truth as far as he was concerned.
Interesting contrast. We'll take a break and return with Paul Waldman from Media Matters. You got a question or comment? Dial in now, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540. Visit our website at KRXA540.com. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Installing new transmitter, 50,000 cool ones. Operating the finest talk radio station west of the Gavilan Mountains. Priceless.
KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
Sofas, dinette sets, mattresses, and more. If you have a home furnishing need, we're the place you need to be. So come on down to your friendly town of Marina and visit us. Furniture Outlet, 3056 Del Monte Boulevard in Marina.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli, a Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
Socolo Restaurant in Pacific Grove is the place to go when you're looking for ultra-authentic Mexican food. From our handmade tortillas to our delicious Angus skirt steak, Socolo does it right. You won't find canned tomatoes, frozen meat, or pre-made items at Socolo. Everything is made here. We proudly use only Angus beef. Some of our specialty items include pozole, chicken mole, handmade sopes, and the only handmade flour tortilla on the peninsula. We feature seafood items like wild salmon, ceviche, and numerous shrimp and fish dishes. If you're looking for fresh and authentic Mexican food, Socolo is the place to go. Socolo is located at 162 Fountain Avenue in Pacific Grove. Our phone number is 373-7911. Catering and food to go is also available. Socolo Restaurant at 162 Fountain Avenue, Pacific Grove is the place to go for quality, authentic Mexican food. Call 373-7911 for takeout or reservations. Socolo will also be opening soon in downtown Salinas. Look for us.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 24 minutes after the hour. Vincent Bugliosi will join us in the next segment right after the bottom of the hour. His new book is A Call for the Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. And Paul Waldman, the counselor has invited you to stay tuned and listen. He said you'll pick up some new things, some bombshells that he's going to drop over the next hour. So you've been warned. Just one more thing about Scott McClellan, because I want to talk about the way major anchors have responded to his remarks. We know that Katie Couric is really alone among the million-dollar news faces to offer some criticism, including some self-criticism. But we have Charlie Gibson saying, I think the media did a pretty good job. There was a lot of skepticism raised, he said, about Colin Powell's pre-war speech at the UN. Only Jeff Cohen did a search and actually found the story that Charlie Gibson anchored of Colin Powell's speech to the UN, and there was not one word of criticism, actual or implied. And Cohen says that in the 60 days prior to our invasion of Iraq, less than 1%, that is 3 out of 393 sources on ABC, CBS, NBC, and PBS newscasts were against the war. 1%, that's 3 out of roughly 400. And I think that gives us a pretty stark statistical look at the media's failure.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, memories fade, and it was 5 years ago, but it's true that there were very few voices on the air who were critical of the war. It was basically all about how it was going to happen. You had a lot of generals on there who were brought on, who turned out to be essentially working for the Pentagon, who were brought on to give what was supposed to be objective analysis but turned out to be just Pentagon talking points. And the general tenor in the news media was, this is happening and there's no point in standing in the way of it. And, you know, there are lots of journalists who have admitted that since then, that they were silenced, that anything that they wrote that got questioned the fundamental premises that the White House was offering was either pushed to the back pages or not put in the paper or aired on television at all. In the face of this general consensus that it was a tremendous failure and one with extraordinary consequences on the part of the press, you know, you still have people like Charlie Gibson or like David Gregory who are out there in response to McClellan defending the press's performance, when I don't think any serious person can actually argue that they really did their job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is stunning. Another item that you have up at Media Matters today, and I have to offer a little confession here first. I've never been inside an Applebee's, Paul. But I would never make a comment about Applebee's to act like I'm, you know, one of the people who patronizes Applebee's. So tell us about David Brooks, the columnist from the New York Times.
Well, you know, this is something that's become common, especially with Barack Obama. You have all of these reporters, very elite Washington-based reporters who, you know, most of them come from well-to-do backgrounds and went to good universities and exist in a very rarefied circle, expounding on how Barack Obama just can't connect with ordinary people. And you see this, you know, he's not the first, the second, or the third Democrat to whom this has happened. Somehow it never applies to Republicans. But you had David Brooks, columnist for the New York Times, regular contributor to NPR and to PBS, on MSNBC, I think, talking about how Obama just can't connect to, quote-unquote, downscale people. And he says, and I'll quote here, so Obama's problem is he doesn't seem like the kind of guy who could go into an Applebee's salad bar and people think he fits in naturally there. Now, this came up at one of our editorial meetings, and somebody said, wait a second, I don't think Applebee's has salad bars. And so we called the Applebee's Corporation just to confirm, yeah. And they told us that, in fact, none of their restaurants have salad bars. It seems like something trivial, but it's kind of indicative of how you have these people who, you know, who are themselves the elite of the elite, talking about how someone like Barack Obama just can't connect with those ordinary Joes,
yeah.
Who are utterly unfamiliar to the media figures themselves.
All right, I'm going to call David Brooks and invite him out to lunch. We'll go to Applebee's. It'll be our first time each. Thank you, Paul.
My pleasure.
Paul Waldman at MediaMatters.org. I'm Peter B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. China's Olympic Committee has issued a list of rules for foreigners attending the Beijing Olympics. It runs 9 pages and covers everything from demonstrations to cultural pollution. And I know why this story's on the wires. The general tone is that China is imposing the kind of rules that no free country would ever accept. But I've looked at these rules, and frankly, I think that most Americans... Well, actually, I'll let you decide after this.
So you got an adjustable rate mortgage, and now the rate is about to adjust higher. What do you do?
Here's a smart borrower tip, courtesy of the Smart Borrower Center at LendingTree.com.
First, consider how long you plan to stay in your home. If you're planning to stay at least 3 years, refinancing may be worth it. But if you plan to move in less than 2 years, any savings may not cover the cost of refinancing.
For more information and objective advice on lending, visit the Smart Borrower Center at LendingTree.com/smartborrower today or call 1-800-555-TREE for information and licensing.
In 15 minutes, you could spend a fortune at the gas pump. You could make yourself sick on beef jerky. You could probably adopt way too many cats. Or, in 15 minutes, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance by switching to Geico. There are plenty of ways to save. Discounts for being a good driver, multi-car discounts. You could save 15% or more. But if you enjoy spending your 15 minutes with way too many cats, by all means, who might I judge?
For a free rate quote, visit Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
China has issued its rules of conduct for Olympic visitors, and here they are. Let's see what you think. Anybody with a mental disease will be sent back. Yes, yes, too harsh. No journalists may travel to Tibet. That's right. Well, you knew that was coming. Okay, how about this one? There may be undercover agents at the games dressed as volunteers. I think we'd do the same thing. How about this one? In order to hold any public gathering, parade, or protest, the organizer must apply with the local police authorities. No such activity can be held unless a permit is given. Oh, of course. Okay, here's one. No religious or political banners or insulting slogans that disturb the public order will be allowed. Yeah, that's too harsh. But then, you know, our own Supreme Court ruled that those students in Alaska had no right to display a banner reading Bong Hits for Jesus during the 2002 Olympic torch relay. So maybe not so harsh. In fact, maybe we wish we had a rule like that. Also under the free speech category, the Chinese rules threaten criminal prosecution against anybody who burns, defaces, insults, or tramps on the national flag or insignia. Heck yes, we tried to amend the Constitution to get that done here. Plus, it prohibits the entry of materials that are harmful to China's politics, economics, culture and morals, and to maintain public hygiene, people sleeping in doorways or outdoors would be summarily removed. Are we sure China's a police state? Oh, of course we are. What was I thinking? The Osgood File, Dave Ross, on the CBS Radio Network.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Hear ye! Hear ye! The coat's in session. The coat's in session. Now, here come the judge. Here come the judge.
Here come the judge!
In the case of the people... versus George W. Bush. The charge is murder.
Stop beating that bird. Cause here comes the judge. Don't nobody bird.
For the people, prosecutor Vincent Bugliosi. For the former president, one of the greatest legal minds of all American history, Alberto Gonzalez.
I know where you're going to be if you don't eat my weed.
Vincent Pugliosi is the guy who put Charles Manson away, and he is still away. And if he has his way, he'll put George W. Bush away, or maybe even the ultimate penalty, the death penalty. Vincent Pugliosi, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Happy to be on the show, Peter.
Nice to talk with you, sir, and good to see you once again. I met you about 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah, right.
You no longer actively practice law. You write crime books.
Yeah, well, I'm still a member of the bar, but I work 7 days a week writing important cases. I just finished the prosecution of George W. Bush for murder. Before that, last year, after a 20-year effort, Reclaiming History, the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, which just won a record-breaking third Edgar Allan Poe Award a month ago in New York City. And it's going to be made into a 10-hour miniseries by Tom Hanks for HBO. Then, of course, I wrote Outrage, The Five Reasons Why O.J. Simpson Got Away with Murder, mm-hmm. and The Manson Case. And I've written other true crime books. So yeah. My interest seems to be in true crime. And here we're talking about the biggest crime of all.
Indeed. And to speed the process along here, I have for you in 30 seconds, if we can get this to work right, the lies that were told before we launched our unnecessary unilateral invasion, a preemptive strike against Iraq.
Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction.
Iraq's weapons of mass destruction.
A clear threat to the United States.
And there's dozens of ballistic missiles.
It is sponsored and sheltered terrorists.
Paying suicide
Chemical
bombers.
Weapons are equally chosen.
Biological weapons, including anthrax and botulism toxins.
Biological and chemical agent to kill millions of people.
Chemical weapons, including VX and sarin, mustard gas.
To a massive and sudden horror.
Massive death and destruction.
Death on a massive scale.
30 seconds, 13 lies. The characters include Bush, Cheney.
Yeah.
We heard Rumsfeld in there. We heard Powell and Rice.
Hardly any of those lies could be used by me in a prosecution of George Bush. Mm-hmm. They don't deal with the issue here. And I'm not sure that these people didn't believe some of these things. I'll be telling you about the Manning memo where Bush may not have believed it, but that's not clear. Mm-hmm. That's not clear. All of these things were lies, and I have them in my book.
You do?
But that's not what this trials would be about. The mm-hmm. issue is not whether he had weapons of mass destruction or not, or whether they lied about it, because I'm not sure that they did lie about it. There's only two lies that they've told, and I have documentary evidence to support it, that I would use to bring George Bush to justice. The first lie is that Saddam Hussein was an imminent threat to the security of this country.
Mm-hmm.
When George Bush told the nation that Hussein was an imminent threat to the security of this country and that we had to strike first in self-defense, we're not talking about weapons of mass destruction. Now, weapons of mass destruction were the basis for his saying that Hussein was an imminent threat.
Mm-hmm.
When he said that Hussein was an imminent threat, he was telling millions of unsuspecting Americans the exact opposite of what his own CIA was telling him, that Hussein was not an imminent threat to the security of this country. Let me just digress for a moment. Weapons of mass destruction don't mean anything. I mean, Britain has weapons of mass destruction. China, Russia, are we going to war with them? France, Pakistan? The only issue is whether a nation that has weapons of mass destruction, are they or are they not an imminent threat to the security of this country? Just mm-hmm. having weapons of mass destruction means nothing at all. I have documentary also quoting words from Bush's own mouth that not only didn't he believe that Hussein was an imminent threat to the security of this country, but get this, Peter, he was actually talking about bogus ways to provoke Saddam Hussein into a war.
That was January 30th, 2003, in a meeting with Tony Blair.
January 31st, that's right.
Okay. Close enough.
Right? No, you're right. If Bush were prosecuted for murder and this evidence was offered, and I have so much more in the book, this alone would be enough to prove that he took this nation to war under false pretenses. And therefore, under the law, he's guilty of the murder of close to 4,000 American soldiers who have lost their lives so far. Now, I want to talk about something else before we get into the backup for what I just told you. Because to me, it served as one of the emotional underpinnings for this book. I have overwhelming evidence in the book, including some very telling photographs that people are talking about, that throughout the hell on earth that George Bush created in Iraq, he smiled through it all. In fact, you look at a photo of George Bush and five or six other people, they're all smiling. Mm-hmm. Who's got the biggest smile on his face? George Bush. It's unprecedented in American history that I know of for any American president during a time of war to have the fun and be in the good spirits that this guy was.
Now, it's certainly appropriate to resent him for that, but how is that culpable?
It's not. But I have half of a chapter on that. It could be relevant on the issue of the death penalty, but you're right, it has no relevance on the issue of guilt. But I want to talk about this, because who is this guy that I'm after with such a palpable anger? There's evidence that's very clear that at the very time that young American soldiers who never had a chance to live out their dreams were being blown to pieces by roadside bombs in Iraq, this guy, George Bush, was having fun and enjoying life to the fullest. I'm talking about running, bicycling, joking with friends, slapping backs.
But he says he stopped playing golf.
Yeah, I know. I heard about that. But way
he
later.
He can't get the date right.
Yeah, right. Way later than that in 2003. No. This went on for the whole period. Look, as recently as 2008, he shows up at a press conference to endorse John McCain, okay? And John McCain's not there. You know what he starts doing? Starts doing a tap dance, starts doing a dance. This is a happy man, okay? Dancing, swiveling his hips like Elvis to blaring music, eating his hot dogs and blueberry pie, almost always being in a good spirit. And Peter, this I'm giving you this as part of the emotional underpinning for this entire book. You don't have to take my word for this. George Bush has no hesitancy in talking about how much he's enjoying himself. Let me give you a couple quotes from this guy, and then we'll get back to the evidence. And as I'm telling you these things, try to imagine Roosevelt, Truman, LBJ, Nixon, during their respective wars, saying things like this. War is a very grim period, and if you study these people, they were not happy. I mean, LBJ weighed very heavily on him. He told Jack Valeni, every morning night when I looked at the CAS reports, it was like drinking carbolic acid. He ended up not running for re-election. Let's listen to George Bush, right in the middle of this horror in Iraq. I mean, people being beheaded, terrible mutilations of bodies, sea of blood. Laura and I are having the time of our lives. Can you imagine any other president in the middle of this war? I'm going to have a perfect day. I'm in a great mood. I'm feeling pretty good about life. Now, Peter, even if George Bush was only guilty of making an innocent mistake and taking this nation to war, let's assume that, just for the sake of argument, with all of the death, horror, and suffering he has caused, what type of a monstrous individual is it who could literally be happy with his life? I'm showing you some of the reasons why I have this tremendous animus for this guy. Some people have said to me, well, let me tell you this. The people that are responding to this book are broken down to three categories, and you heard the Ron Owen show this morning. Here are the three categories, in a very broad way, that they're being broken down into. A third, just love it, Mr. Bugliosi, thank you for writing this book. I had the longest line on Saturday at the L.A. Convention Center. It's been written about. The line was over 2 hours long. No other book came close at the Convention Center. Thank you for writing this book. They love it. That's one third. The other third is the repugnant, hypocritical, and un-American right wing in this country, the most un-American of all Americans. Their position, and this is not an opinion, I'm going to give you a fact. Their position is this. As long as Bush is a conservative Republican, and so are they, anything he does, anything at all, including murder, is just fine with them. Okay? Now here's the third group. The third group says, Mr. Bugliosi, we love what you're doing, but this is crazy. Have you lost your marbles? This can't be done. You're wasting time. Why are you doing this? I'm surprised at you. I mean, don't you know any better? No, these people haven't read the book. Those that have read the book see that I've got all the evidence in the world. Now, that third category, if there's anyone listening out there, I'm just trying to save some time. It's basically I'm answering a question in advance. The United States Constitution clearly says that if a president commits a crime in office, he cannot be convicted at that time. He's got temporary immunity.
Mm-hmm.
He has to first be impeached convicted in the Senate and removed from office. After that happens, he can be prosecuted like anyone else. I mean, Nixon, they were about to prosecute him, and when was it? 74, I think. Or was it 75?
73 and 74.
Okay, but when he resigned, there was a lot of demand to prosecute him for crimes like obstruction of perjury. Subornation of perjury. Obstruction of justice. Subornation of perjury, wiretapping. And then, of course, Ford stepped in and obviated it. We can go back to the Federalist Papers, 1787, Alexander Hamilton. Once the president leaves office, he can be prosecuted for crimes he committed in office.
Even if not impeached.
Yeah, he doesn't have to be impeached. No.
Okay.
Nixon wasn't impeached. He was about to be impeached.
You're correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Forget the point that I was making here because you asked that question. But
I'm sorry.
No. I was going to give you a follow up, and I absolutely forget the exact point that I was trying to make.
Okay, but
I'm saying that once he leaves office, he can be prosecuted like anyone else. Here's the point that I'm trying to make. If anyone thinks that this proposition on my part is silly, then they almost have to say that if an American president takes the nation to war under false pretenses, and even if 50 million Americans die, we shouldn't do anything at all to him. Now, unless they want to make that statement, and they're going to sound awfully silly making it, they have to accept this revolutionary notion, because either he's prosecuted in an American courtroom, or this guy gets off. And I want to get into the issue of impeachment, because I see you have some impeachment signs on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have time to talk about it now?
Yes, we do. We've got 2 minutes till the break.
Okay. Of course he should be impeached. That's too self-evident to state. I mean, apparently in America, we impeach presidents for having consensual sex and then trying to cover it up. So if we impeach presidents for that, then if a president takes the nation to war under false pretenses and over 100,000 people die as a direct result of it, obviously the punishment has got to be much, much more severe. That's just common sense. Is there any way to stop that noise?
No, just keep going.
I know, but it's hard to concentrate when I hear.
Well, we just have to keep going.
Okay. If Bush were only impeached and removed from office, he'd still be a free man, still be able to wake up in the morning with his cup of coffee and freshly squeezed orange juice and read the morning paper, still be able to travel widely and lead a life of privilege, still be able to belong to his country club and get standing ovations from the Republican faithful wherever he goes. For what George Bush did, why would anyone think that that would be the appropriate punishment for what this guy did? So what I'm telling you is that impeachment alone, I'm not saying he shouldn't be impeached, would be a joke in this case. When you do what he did, if I can prove that he did it, then an American jury should decide whether he is guilty or not guilty of first-degree murder. And if he's convicted, what's the appropriate punishment? One of their options being the imposition of the death penalty. The other two options being life imprisonment or life imprisonment without the possibility of parole.
I have in mind an ocean view suite at Guantanamo Bay. Vincent Bugliosi is with us. His new book is The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. And he's with us for another 40 minutes till the bottom of the next hour. So if you have a question or comment, give us a call. And I've got 2 free copies of this book to give away to people who call in with good questions. You know my number. It's 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. We'll continue in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, this is Stephanie Miller. You're listening to the station that encourages you to think for yourself. What a concept. AM 540 KRXA.
With gentleness overcome anger. With generosity overcome meanness. With truth overcome deceit. These words are from Buddha, and they are some of the most beautiful and powerful words on the planet. They allow us to free ourselves of our anger, our pride, and our sorrow. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and I am honored to say that I am here on KRXA with my little radio program, Aspire, which is heard on Saturday and Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. And I hope that you will join me for a little bit of the uncommon, maybe something outside the box, something that speaks to the truth that lives within you and me. And maybe we will just find that which is the very meaning of our own existence. Please join me Saturday and Sundays at 9 a.m. here on KRXA.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
We got a president so bad, gotta be the worst we ever had. Got the job because of his dad. Now we're all in danger.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. Yeah, we got a bad president.
He come around up to no good. Broke the old treaties because he could. Struts all around like a hood. Got us in a world of trouble. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better in the morning.
Vincent Bugliosi with us. He doesn't want to put George W. Bush in a straitjacket. He wants to put him in the dock as a defendant in the prosecution of George W. Bush for murder. That's the title of his brand new book. It's getting a lot of attention around the country. Our lines are jammed. We'll go to your calls here shortly. But one of the critical questions here, Vince Bugliosi, is jurisdiction.
Right.
And as I was telling you during the break, my listeners and I have supported impeachment, but the Democratic leadership has blocked it. And so we've been straining for a mechanism, and I think you've identified it, because since Bush himself did not sign the treaty that would have bound the United States to the International Criminal Court in The Hague,
right,
that mechanism isn't available.
Right.
And there have been talks about original jurisdiction of European countries that
right.
could try to try him the way Pinochet was tried.
Right.
But that seems very wobbly to me.
Right.
Talk about why you have honed in on this particular approach.
Okay. It starts with the conspiracy to commit murder. The most important element of that crime of conspiracy is an agreement. However, you cannot have a conspiracy unless you also have an overt act, no matter how insignificant, to carry out the object of the conspiracy. And the law is clear, as I point out in the book, that if this overt act is committed in any of the 50 states or any county within those states, then that county or that state has jurisdiction to prosecute the conspirators. You follow? Now, what are the overt acts here that would give jurisdiction to the states and to DA's offices around the country? There's two very prominent overt acts, and it can be very insignificant. I mean, A and B conspire to rob a bank. A goes out and gets gasoline for the car, for the getaway car. That's an overt act. What are the two overt acts here? When Bush was lying on television and where else around the country, those lies, by way of the media, were taken throughout the United States. Car radios, television sets in all the 50 states. That's mm-hmm. one overt act right there. The second overt act is recruiting soldiers to fight his war. So these states would have jurisdiction. And I've got all types of authority for that. I mean, I've spent well over 100 hours at the L.A. County Law Library, the Ninth Circuit Library
mm-hmm.
in Pasadena. Federally, the prosecutor would be the U.S. Attorney General in Washington, D.C. There are 93 U.S. attorneys around the country who theoretically would have jurisdiction, but as a practical matter, they would never proceed against a former president without the consent of their boss in Washington, D.C. So for practical purposes, when you talk about federally for the crimes of murder or conspiracy to commit murder, I have to apologize for my voice because I've been talking for about 5 hours. Basically, on a federal level, we're only talking about one prosecutor.
Mm-hmm.
But on a state level, I've established jurisdiction for the attorney general in each of the 50 states, plus district attorneys within those states, to prosecute George Bush for the murder of any soldier or soldiers from that state or county who died fighting George Bush's war in Iraq. Now, that's opening up jurisdiction to close to perhaps 1,000 prosecutors around this country.
Yeah.
And with all of those prosecutors, and with the enormous amount of evidence, I hope we'll get into it, in this book against Bush, I'm talking about incriminating evidence of guilt. I don't think it's unreasonable at all to believe that there's at least one prosecutor in America, and maybe more, who's courageous enough to step forward and say, hey, this is the United States of America. No man is above the law. The evidence of guilt is clear. I'm going to go after this guy and bring about justice for the American people. We're just about, within a week, we're just about ready to send out the book with a cover letter from me to prosecutors around this country, tell them to read the book if they feel that there's sufficient legally admissible evidence and they agree with jurisdiction to go forward. And I'm offering myself, you know, to help out in any way that they see fit, whether it's merely as a consultant or as a special prosecutor. I don't have to tell you that as a prosecutor, I won 105 out of 106 felony jury trials, including 21 murder convictions, but I'm offering my services.
I'd love to see you get this case.
Okay.
Let's take a phone call. Can you put those headsets on? Patrick in Monterey is responsible, in part, for the appearance of Vincent Bugliosi here today. Patrick, go right ahead.
It is such a pleasure to speak to you, sir.
Thank you.
Peter, I think the highest praise I can give both of you from this very devout agnostic is that you're both doing the Lord's work.
Okay, I'll take that, Patrick. Thank you.
I have a couple of questions. Three, if you include my final question, which is what can average people like myself do? But I'm personally already committed myself. I've bought 3 copies of the book already, and I haven't even had a chance to read it. I've committed myself to buy 10 copies to give to people. And I've also committed myself to, unless these people are already in the process of booking Mr. Bugliosi, I'm going to call Mike Papantonio and Bobby Kennedy, Ring of Fire, Ed Schultz, Randy Rhodes, Mike Malloy, Ray Taliaferro on KGO, Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, Keith Olbermann, Chris Matthews.
I'd like to comment on
Daily Show and the Colbert Report. How can we get him on Good Morning America, Today Show, Oprah Winfrey?
All right.
Question.
Let's pause there for a second, Patrick.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I'm glad that Patrick brought that up, because there's a very interesting story behind this book right here, and I think that story is going to answer his question.
All right, and we have 1 minute till the break.
I can't
go ahead.
Do it in a minute.
Well,
I can start on it. No,
okay.
I can't even do that.
Start on it.
Okay.
Let's not wait.
Okay. I've had 3 books, got up to number 1, New York Times. I've had other New York Times bestsellers. Never, ever had trouble with getting a book published. It's an automatic. I don't even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
This book right here, I had a very difficult time getting it published, had to fly back to New York, met with top publishers. It's a very liberal publishing industry. They were very sympathetic with what I was saying, and they recognized the marketability of the book. It's doing extremely well.
Yeah.
But they basically were terrified of publishing this book. They'd say things like this to me: Mr. Bugliosi, are you sure you want to publish this book? One put it down in black and white, too hot to handle.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally got the book published. Very difficult time for the first time in my career. The audio on the book, never even think about it. My agent tells me we're going to be with Simon and Schuster, like reclaiming history. He could not get one audio company in America to do the audio for this book. The British Broadcasting Company outside of America decided to do it. I guess our time's up right now.
Yeah, we'll take a break here and continue after the top of the hour with Vincent Bugliosi. His new book, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. Congratulations to Vanguard Press for having the courage to publish it.
Yes, yes.
More on The Peter B. Collins Show next.
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader, from Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor. You name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at The King of America.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
John McCain proposes town hall debates.
Just two Americans running for the highest office in the greatest nation on earth.
Jimmy Carter advises against an Obama-Clinton ticket.
Could have the worst of both worlds.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. No point in waiting. Before the nominating conventions this summer, John McCain wants a series of 10 town hall-style debates with Barack Obama. They'd stand side by side and take questions from the audience.
I don't think we need any big media-run productions, no process questions from reporters, no spin rooms. Just two Americans running for the highest office in the greatest nation on earth.
He says they'd keep it as simple as possible.
I even suggested we travel to them together on the same plane. Probably help out on energy savings.
The Obama campaign is receptive, but says it would like the encounters to be even less structured and longer. Obama and Hillary Clinton had a brief conversation today when they both appeared before the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, but Obama says they didn't discuss anything in detail. Some Democrats see Obama-Clinton as a dream ticket, but not former President Jimmy Carter.
I think that it would be not beneficial to Obama to choose.
He told Britain's Guardian newspaper both candidates have negatives.
If you take that 50% who just don't want to vote for Clinton and add it to whatever element they might be that don't think Obama is white enough or old enough or experienced enough, or because he's got a middle name that sounds Arab, could have the worst of both worlds.
Obama has appointed three people, including Caroline Kennedy, to help with the selection process. Bill Nichols of Politico.com says they should look for experience.
Lacking a lot of the years in government that presidential candidates might have, I think it would be helpful for him to have someone with a bit more of a longer resume, particularly on national security issues. I think they also have to think through the race-gender equation.
ABC News is reporting that Hillary Clinton will make her concession speech on Friday. Now this.
You know, there's a lot of things you can do with Uncle Sam's stimulus, though. Be a patriot. Go to Advance Auto Parts and get your car right. Hey, don't put it off until your alternator goes bad or battery quits or your brake pads give out. You need your car running right. That's how you get to work, make money, pay bills, buy stuff. If your car doesn't work, neither do you. Advance Auto Parts is on hand, ready to help. So stop on by. Whatever you're working on, Advance will help you keep the wheels turning.
Hi, I'm the owner of an auto body shop, and since we added Aflac to our benefits package at no direct cost to me, all my employees say the same thing. I want
Aflac.
Since we added Aflac, my whole business is running smooth.
Call 1-800-99-AFLAC or go to aflacforbusiness.com. American Family Life Assurance Company of Columbus. Aflac.
The law of supply and demand seems to be driving down the price of crude oil. It fell $2 today.
Last month, we saw crude top out at $135 a barrel. Now we're at about $122 a barrel. A big reason for that is that inventories continue to grow because demand is starting to slip.
CBS News business reporter Alexis Christophorus. Drivers are using less gasoline, and the airlines are cutting back, too. That means fewer flights and higher fares. CBS News correspondent Steve Kathan has details.
United Airlines is cutting 1,100 jobs, with more to come by the end of the year, and it's parking 100 fuel-guzzling planes.
Not only is United planning to cut routes and ground planes, so is American Airlines. Delta's planning to do at least 10 to 15% when they do the new merger with Northwest.
Tom Parsons of BestFares.com, a USA Today analysis, finds cutbacks across the board with fewer flight choices to prime vacation spots and more small cities losing routes altogether. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
Red wine, in moderation, has been thought for some time to have benefits for the cardiovascular system. Now, Dr. Richard Weindruck at the University of Wisconsin says it might keep your heart young.
Simply drinking a few glasses of wine daily or nearly daily may have the ability to significantly slow down several aspects of aging in the heart and perhaps have other beneficial benefits elsewhere in the body.
The key is a natural substance in the wine called resveratrol. Some scientists believe you can get the same benefit by taking it in capsule form. And Welch Foods is helping to fund a study to see if teetotalers can protect their hearts by drinking non-alcoholic grape juice instead of wine. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Imagine all the possibilities for your next painting project. Now imagine saving up to 25% too. From June 5th through the 9th, it's a summer savings event at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams Paint Store. Save up to 25% on exceptional Sherwin-Williams paints, stains, wall coverings, and more. But don't wait. Hurry in and save only at Sherwin-Williams for painting, decorating, and great savings. At Sherwin-Williams. For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Ha! Look at that!
What?
The Nuvi. This is precisely why I subscribed to MSN Direct when I bought this Garmin Nuvi 780.
What is it?
A traffic backup right there on our route.
What do we do?
We avoid it.
How?
The Nuvi simply directs us to the best alternate route, huh?
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. To receive MSN Direct traffic content, you must be within its coverage area. For details, navigate to Garmin.com. Follow the leader.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Vincent Bugliosi wants to prosecute George W. Bush for murder. Impeachment? Forget about it. Vincent Bugliosi is in the studio with me. If you're just joining us, he prosecuted Charles Manson. He told us in 106 trials of criminal defendants, he won 105 convictions. And if we could turn him loose on Bush, and we'll ask him about Cheney, too. I'd love to see them prosecuted, and I'd love to see them convicted. Vincent Bugliosi, we got interrupted by the top of the hour break, and you were responding to Patrick in Monterey and describing a kind of fear of publishing your book and a media blackout since it has hit the bookstores.
Absolutely. It's fear, and it's all traceable to the right wing. When you have a decent and honorable human being like Mario Cuomo saying that he respects Rush Limbaugh, if I may be so presumptuous, he does not respect Rush Limbaugh. How would that even be humanly possible? Mm-hmm. But it's just one among many examples of the shadow of fear that has descended upon this once great nation. So I was saying that I couldn't get the book published. Very difficult time. And first time in my career. I mean, I don't even think about getting it published. It's an automatic. The audio, couldn't get it. Any company in America wouldn't do it. We got the British Broadcasting Company. We're producing now, I'm not, but I'm a part of it, a documentary for the big screen based on my book. They couldn't raise a dime in America. No one would give a dime. The money came in from Canada.
Mm-hmm.
The mainstream media, it's an automatic. Vince Bugliosi's on television whenever I have a book. Automatic. You start on the Good Morning America, Today Show, whatever it is. I've had it for every single book of my career.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't appeared on one national television show yet. Everyone has said no. My publicist calls, mm-hmm. and they say, Vince Pagliosi's got a new book. Oh, great. Yeah, we've had Vince on. He's a good guest. What's the name of the book? The Prosecution of George Bush for Murder. And immediately, I mean, you can almost see them visibly shrink. And say, well, we'll think about that, and we'll get back to you, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, the liberal media is broken down into two areas. 90% of them are absolutely spineless. And like I say in the book, they're physiological marvels who are able to sit erect in front of a camera even though they don't have a spine. That's 90%. And I'm not mad at those people because they're frightened of their own shadow. Who am I to say you're a bad person because you're frightened? But I'll tell you the group that I'm very, very angry about, and they're going to hear from me, see? They're going to hear from me in the second edition of this book. I'm not going to name any names right now. The other group are the ones that aren't frightened, and they do speak out about Bush all the time, calling him a murderer, a terrible human being, everything like that. So instead of salivating over this book, because all we've had is vitriolic words, millions of words of condemnation, which mean nothing to Bush, zero. They've condemned him with words. Now, for the first time, I've put together a case against him that could bring this guy to justice, put him in an American courtroom, and this 10% or 15 or 20, whatever it is, they're not returning phone calls, emails, or anything. And the publicists, as I am, are absolutely outraged. Now, Patrick asked a question, and I'm telling him, these people do not want to do it. Now, why? Okay, I don't know why.
Now, you told me during the break, and you don't want to name names, but I'll just give a hint, that the guy who on a regular basis refers to the Bush crime family, and he is a left-wing talk show host, has declined to interview you?
As I say, I don't want to get into names, but these people are going to hear from me by name. Now, here's the interpretation that I put on this, and this is the interpretation that everyone in New York, we have a big publicity firm representing me, this is their interpretation. That these guys want to be the guy. It's a brand thing. You follow? They want to be the guy. Now I'm coming forward saying things that they didn't even dream of talking about, obviously overshadowing all their vitriol, which means nothing at all to Bush. He couldn't care less. And they don't want me on. Now, I can't be 100% sure, but what other reasonable interpretation would there be when you have a guy calling Bush every dirty name under the sun on national radio or TV or whatever, and then I come forward with a book for the first time to put this SOB in an American courtroom, and they don't want to talk to me. The most reasonable interpretation, and it's human nature, they want to be the guy. They want to be the brand. They want people calling in, call Joe. Joe, I heard you last night talking about Bush. You're wonderful. You're a stand-up guy. And those people are blacklisting me, okay? But those people are going to hear from Vince Pagliosi. Because you can't keep me quiet, okay?
I can tell.
And with respect to George Bush, I may sound silly to you right now, but let me tell you something. I'm going after George Bush. And I may not succeed, but I'm going to do everything that I can to put that guy in an American courtroom being prosecuted for first-degree murder.
Now, what about Cheney?
Well, Cheney, of course. Yeah, Cheney. Well, look, a grand jury is going to have to be convened and taking the testimony of all these people. Most likely they will not testify in front of the grand jury. The indictments would be against Bush, obviously, Cheney, Rice. As a result of the grand jury testimony, we might bring in Rove, Rumsfeld. I have a feeling about Colin Paul, I don't know, but my sense with him is that his only sin is weakness. But who knows what's going to happen? And I would suspect that people like Rice and Cheney, these morally corrupt people, would be on their hands and knees begging the prosecutor for a deal to testify against Bush because they don't want to face the death penalty. They could probably tell us things about Bush that would make our hair curl.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't give any deal to the president. You don't give a deal to the stick-up man to testify against the driver of the getaway car, okay? It's the other way around.
Right.
But I'm dead serious about this. I have a reputation as a prosecutor. My credibility in the criminal law is very good. I never in a million years would talk about bringing a criminal action against the president of the United States unless I felt I had sufficient evidence to convict and that I was standing on very firm legal ground. I'm very, very confident about this case.
Now, what's your thought about Scott McClellan? He's got a lot of ink and a lot of TV time over the last week. Does he contribute to your case?
Well, I guess in a way in that he talks about deception, but his position and mine are completely opposite. I feel that that book, it was a totally media-driven book, because I'd hear snippets, you know. I don't watch TV because I don't have any time, but my wife has it on, and I've picked up snippets in these roundtable discussions. Why would he do this? Why would he do that? Instead of saying, why didn't he do what? What are you talking about? Well, here's what McClellan says, okay, because I've seen him say it. And I've read excerpts from his book. Number one, he says, with respect to the Iraq war, he does not believe that George Bush and his people consciously deceived the American people. Okay? That's the total opposite of my book. My whole book is that these people took this nation to war under false pretenses. He also said that the Iraqi war was a blunder. Okay? Well, a blunder is a mistake. By definition, a blunder means innocence. So he's talking mistake. I'm talking murder.
Intent.
The third thing, he says that he likes George Bush still. Thinks he's a great guy. Well, I don't like criminals, particularly murderers. So the McClellan book and my book are totally and completely different.
Let's take some phone calls. We've got Billy on the line from Capitola. Welcome, Billy, and say hello to Counselor Bugliosi.
It must be great to be Vincent Bugliosi and to wake up these days and know that you're making a living by attacking George Bush. Good man. What a great way to spend the day. Here's the question, of course. Ultimately, I'm afraid of the president's power to pardon power. So that, you know, normally the way we get the people, we get the little guys like we did with Libby. But there we go. He pardons them. So we can't get to the big shot the way you would in any other criminal investigation. And as to why, of course, you can't get the mainstream media to help, it's because they're accessories before the fact.
Right. I agree. Under the Constitution, George Bush can pardon anyone except himself. He cannot pardon himself. So he's going to be a free man one day, and going all the way back to the Federalist Papers and the United States Constitution, once he leaves office, he can be prosecuted like any other American civilian.
All right, Billy, does that do it?
Well, but speak to the issue that normally you get the underlings to talk and use the pressure of 30 years, like with Libby. I mean, this is the thing. If he can pardon everyone, then we won't be able to get to him.
Oh, no. He can pardon them of crimes, but there's also the crime of perjury. If they take the witness stand and they commit perjury, you can prove they're committing perjury. You can put them behind bars for 15, 20, 25 years. He can't pardon future crimes.
Oh, okay.
He can pardon past crimes, and he cannot pardon himself.
Well, he will pass a law that allows him to do that before he...
Very good.
All right. Do you believe that the way he used signing statements is problematic? Is it criminal, in your view?
I don't get into that. It's a separate issue. I haven't studied that.
Okay. Angelina in Seaside, thanks for calling the Peter B. Collins Show, and say hello to Vincent Bugliosi.
Hi, Vincent Bugliosi.
Hi, Angelina.
I like all your other books, and I'm wondering, I understand the connotations with the firing squads, et cetera, but considering the Nuremberg trials and the fact that history is always written by the victors, doesn't the prosecution and other action depend on George Bush and company losing the war?
No. There's only one issue at the criminal trial, one overriding issue at the criminal trial of George Bush. Did he take this nation to war on a lie, or did he not? Did he go to war in Iraq because he believed Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, and therefore we had to attack first because he believed Hussein was an imminent threat to the security of this country? If he believed that, he's got the defense of self-defense. If the prosecutor can show that he did not believe that he was taking the nation to war in self-defense, but he took the nation to war under false pretenses, and then all the deaths, all the killings of American soldiers in Iraq become unlawful killings and therefore murder. So the central issue at the trial is whether Bush acted in self-defense or did he not act in self-defense.
And you also talk about in the book the legal theory that he enabled innocent people to do this for him. So essentially, by sending our troops into this war, those who lost their lives, those were murders that were not directly caused by Bush, but he is nevertheless responsible for
Absolutely.
Them. And that's similar to the felony murder rule, isn't it?
Yeah. It's called the innocent agent rule, that if you set in motion a chain of events which causes someone to do something, mm-hmm. that actually, if you had done, would be a crime. It's also a crime, even though you're not there, even though you didn't do it. Now, unless Bush intended to conduct a war without casualties, he absolutely 100% knew that when he invaded Iraq, there was going to be Iraqi resistance in self-defense or repelling an invader, and American soldiers would die. And under the law of innocent agent, it's been codified under the federal code, he's responsible for those deaths.
All right. We're going to take a break and return with Vincent Bugliosi. And, Angelina, can we send you a copy of this new book?
I'd love it.
All right. Hold on. We'll get your address, and we'll ask him to sign it for you, too.
Thank you.
The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. Vincent Bugliosi is our guest. We'll take more of your calls after a quick break here on the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. To experience one-of-a-kind dishes, don't forget the weekly specials. The Mexicali Grill is open Monday through Saturday for lunch until 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale with 2 hours of talk radio all about our daily challenges, our fears, changes, crisis, addictions. Over 1,700 of them, can you believe it? Using the 12 steps, the law of attraction, whatever it takes. Join me Saturday afternoons 3 to 5 with my guests and we'll find solutions together. The Sheila Show, Saturday 3 to 5 on KRXA, brought to you by Benji's Princess Monterey Whale Watching Trips. Open daily on Old Fisherman's Wharf, Monterey.
Tomorrow Matters, the premier local radio program for matching the global problems of today with the solutions for a better tomorrow, hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll bring in the guests and you call in with your questions and ideas, and we'll collectively work to set the standards for a more sustainable future, and we're doing it 5 times a week. Join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters, weekdays at 2, because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
Well, good afternoon. Checking traffic on KRXA and quiet as we start things off today. Just one accident to report. It's in Carmel Valley, East Carmel Valley Road at Tassajara Road. A vehicle hit the embankment there. Looks like a minivan. Emergency crews now on the scene, and they have downgraded. It's now just a minor injury crash. Expect delays if you're in the area. Highway 17, Santa Cruz Mountains, currently checking in, stalling, accident-free. Highway 68, so far so good. No problems this afternoon. Traffic looking okay at the Fish Hook in Santa Cruz, but both directions of Highway 1 going through Santa Cruz County as well as Monterey County looking good right now. And this is brought to you by your neighborhood Ace Hardware. Shop the Ace Big Daddy Sale with great ideas for every dad. Hurry in. The sale is today through Monday at Ace, the helpful place. If you spot a traffic problem, give us a call, 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix. That's traffic on KRXA.
We'll be right back.
time for more on the Peter B. Collins Show. I can't take it no more. John Fogerty can't take it no more. Vincent Bugliosi's in the same boat. His new book is called The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. And Vince Bugliosi, I've been asking people why no media folks have asked Scott McClellan about the Downing Street memo, which came out of London. That's, right. Of course, the Prime Minister's residence.
Yeah.
And it described how Bush, this was from the summer of 2002,
right, right.
that Bush was determined to go to war and that they were, quote, fixing the intelligence around this predetermined policy.
Fixing the facts and the intelligence.
And so. I consider that to be a smoking gun.
Yeah,
you,
I don't.
You believe that the memo written by Sir David Manning, who was the British ambassador to Washington in the early Blair and Bush years, is much more actionable. Tell us why.
Well, the Downing Street memo certainly had offered at the trial, but I would never take Bush to trial and prosecute him for murder on something like that, because the very language, fixing the facts mean the truth. Fixing the truth around the policy, it's ambiguous. The furthest you could go with that argument is that he was cherry picking, which is bad, but you don't ask for the death penalty against a cherry picker, okay? So I would use it, but it would be very, very supplementary. The Manning Street memo is infinitely more powerful. The Downing Street memo got an enormous amount of coverage, but the Manning Street memo you don't hear about anywhere. On January 31st, 2003, less than 2 months before Bush ordered the invasion of Iraq, on the rationale that Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, therefore was an imminent threat, so we had to strike first, Bush and British Prime Minister Tony Blair met in the Oval Office with six of their top aides, including Condoleezza Rice, National Security Advisor, and David Manning, the chief foreign policy advisor for Tony Blair. Right after the meeting, Manning prepared a memo for Blair, five-page memo stamped extremely sensitive, in which he summarized what was said at the meeting. And he said that Bush and Blair expressed their doubts that any weapons of mass destruction would ever be found in Iraq. Now, that's pretty bad by itself, but it gets worse. It gets worse. He goes on to say that Bush was so upset and so worried about the failure of UN inspectors to find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq that he talked about three possible ways to, quote, provoke a confrontation with Hussein, one of which, Bush said, was to, quote, fly U-2 aircraft over Iraq, falsely painted in United Nations colors. And Bush said, if Hussein fires on them, it's a breach of UN resolutions, thereby justifying war. So here we have George Bush telling the nation and the world that Hussein was an imminent threat to the security of this country, but behind closed doors, this very small man was talking about how to provoke Hussein into a war. Now, the last person in the world, Peter, that a person acting in self-defense would try to provoke is the person he's in deathly fear of, the person who's about to attack him, okay? Mm-hmm. If George Bush truly felt that Hussein was an imminent threat to security of this country, and that would be his defense at a trial, the thought of provoking Hussein into war would never, ever, ever have entered his mind. That Manning Street memo is an extremely powerful piece of evidence.
Let's go to David in New York. Thanks for calling. You're on the air. I'm sorry, it's Andy. I wasn't looking at my screen. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Mr. Bugliosi.
Yes, sir.
Hey, thank you very much for having the guts to take this on. I guess staring down Charlie, this is nothing, huh?
Yeah, Manson and I used to have staring sessions. One went on for about 20 minutes. But I'm going after Bush, I'm going after him, and I'm not going to be satisfied until I see him in an American courtroom. I may not get anywhere, but I think there's a substantial possibility, not a high probability, that he's going to end up in court.
Just got a minute, Andy. Go ahead.
Well, the last 8 years in this country have been a living hell for me watching this individual operate, and it's been a disgrace to our nation. So I hope you get to do what you want to do. I have one comment real quick. On May 19th, you put a Huffington Post article up.
Yes.
And in there you had some Iraqi deaths of like 100,000.
Yes.
Since the start of our invasion. Well, there's a lot of numbers out there that are a lot higher.
Like I'm aware of that. And it's in my book. Yeah, I'm aware.
Right.
The numbers go even over 1 million. But I'm using a very conservative number. At least 100 million innocent Iraqi men, women, children, and babies have died horrible.
Well, you said 100 million. You mean 100,000.
I'm sorry, 100,000. At least over
right.
100,000. But the numbers are much higher than that, but I want to be very conservative.
Right, and with the corporate media here, we do not see, like we used to see when I was a kid when Vietnam was going on, we saw the horrors going on there.
Right.
We do not see that here.
That's right. It's
we
all
do not
sanitized.
See the horror.
It's off the screen. Andy,
right.
Thanks for your call. Hold on. We'll get you a copy of the book, too, okay? Appreciate
thanks.
You calling. And Mr. Bugliosi, a pleasure to see you again. Thank you, sir.
So much, Peter. Appreciate you having me on the show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
What's really at stake? This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. McCain and Obama have made lots of promises, but in fact, there aren't many they can deliver on by themselves. For example, both candidates promised to help American workers, but they can't do that alone. Any jobs program or educational program has to go through Congress. They both promise health care reform, but same thing. The president doesn't rule by fiat. Congress could change it completely. And so on, for every single promise they've made except one. There's one major policy the president can change by fiat, and that's military policy. As commander-in-chief, he and he alone can tell the military to remain in Iraq or to make plans for getting out. Which means that for all the talk about change, the 2008 campaign will end up like the 2004 campaign. It'll be about Iraq. And that's where John McCain has the flexibility that Barack Obama doesn't. You see, McCain would go into office promising to keep the troops where they are. However, once elected, if he came to a different conclusion, if he went on television saying, "My fellow Americans, I've changed my mind, we can leave after all," no one's going to hassle him for that. But now flip it around. If Barack Obama wins, promising to bring the troops home, and he comes to a different conclusion after consulting with the generals, and he has to give a speech saying, "My fellow Americans, I've changed my mind, we can't leave after all," the right would say, "I told you so," and the left would feel betrayed, and his presidency would be pretty much over. So there it is. Two candidates making promises, but only one who has to be dead sure he's right. Now this.
So where do you get the gift that keeps on giving? Advance Auto Parts. Here's how it works. You buy a gift card at Advance and load it up from $5 to $500. You give it. They get it. And then it keeps on giving their car fresh oil, brake pads, wiper blades, air filters, spark plugs, shocks, batteries, everything. It's the most important tool in their wallet. And it's how you're going to help them turn their car into a harder working, better performing, and more reliable vehicle. Whatever you're working on, Advance will help you keep the wheels turning.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Make this the year you become personally acquainted with the May family and Jim's Restaurant at 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.50 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget, Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Cornerstone Wellness Center in Monterey specializes in reducing stress and pain naturally for you, your children, and even your pets. With 8 professionals, techniques like quantum biofeedback, homeopathy, infrared and ozone steam saunas, and lymphatic drainage are used to help rid your body of toxins, which can cause disease. I'm Sheila Gale, and I've lived with chronic pain for years. Trina Hammack uses state-of-the-art quantum biofeedback and Rolf structural integration. I feel better physically and mentally. Cornerstone also offers ionic foot baths, massage, organic microcurrent facials, and the latest in body strengthening and corrective exercise specifically designed for your body so you'll start living pain-free. Tired of taking medicines? Cornerstone uses homeopathy and top-of-the-line essential oils. Finally, an alternative that really works is here for your entire family. Cornerstone Wellness Center at 1088 Cass Street in Monterey. Call 373-6204. 373-6204.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie. I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave. A shrinking glacier. I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
This is how we do it.
Well, Vincent Bugliosi promised he'd get me a ticket to the trial of George W. Bush for murder. I can't wait.
This is how we do it. It's Friday night, and I feel all right. The party.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. Joining me is California's Lieutenant Governor. That's Democrat John Garamendi. Hello, John.
Peter B., how are you today?
I'm doing all right today. How about you?
Oh, if I were any better, I'd be embarrassed. It's been a good day.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Not with regard to the budget and where we are with it, but rather in the opportunities to really solve that problem. That we can do it if we wanted to.
Well, I want to come back to the California budget, but the breaking news really is in the presidential campaigns. And you and I talked a few months back that you've been supporting Hillary Clinton, and, you know, I've been supporting Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see if we can unify right here today, John. are you ready to close ranks and support the Democratic nominee?
Of course.
I had no doubt about that. Is Hillary?
She said so last night. I think she left open the question of when, but she said last night that, in fact, she said exactly that, not in the words of close ranks, but we had to elect a Democrat, and that she was going to do everything she needed and could do to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think the answer is yes, of course she will.
Now, you, the presidential campaigns are different, but you lost a race for governor in 1992 or 93.
94, actually. But.
Okay, thank you. It's a little fuzzy back there that far.
I know, memory issues.
When you lost, you conceded. And it strikes me that Senator Clinton is in a kind of suspended state that I'm uncomfortable with, because it's as if that, you know, the facts are going to change if she just hangs in there long enough.
I'm not sure that's what her motivation is, and I don't have any direct communication with her. And I guess maybe, you know, as I looked at the history of presidential campaigns, maybe something different. And I think there's something to be said for the long history of conventions and the nominating process. It always the final act always takes place at the convention, in which names are put in to nomination,
mm-hmm.
and the speeches are given about by the candidates who are nominated or whose names are put in, and then they give their speech, and then there's a vote, and there's a winner. Sometimes it takes 2, 3, 4, in many cases several dozen, more than a dozen ballots, but there's a winner that comes out of it. And it may very well be that she wants to be the first viable female presidential candidate to be seriously considered by the convention.
To be formally nominated, then?
Formally nominated, give her speech, go to a vote, and then there's a vote that it comes down and Obama has more than she does, and then at the final point, and the last state to be counted,
mm-hmm.
Gets up and says, Mr. President or Chairman, Mr. Chairman, I move that we, by unanimous vote,
mm-hmm.
support Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, it turns, and everything's done. It's a dance, to be sure, but it also is a dance of some importance. In that, in this case, Hillary's campaign, and maybe others, maybe I don't know, Edwards or whomever, are formally nominated.
Mm-hmm.
They have their moment, they have their issues, they have their supporters, and then the vote is taken, and you know maybe then undoubtedly it'll be calculated that
mm-hmm.
Obama would win at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But she's had her moment at the final act. Right now, we're not even, what, 2 months, 2.5 months away
right.
from the final act.
Well,
something to be said here.
I can understand the desire to have that kind of dramatic process at the convention,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
consider the cost of that. And
well,
and also, I believe there are alternatives. She can suspend her campaign, acknowledge that Obama has won the nomination. She doesn't have to release her delegates. She could go to the convention, be nominated, and just as you played it out a moment ago, that would occur, and she could have her moment in August in the spotlight.
Well,
and I don't care to deny her that in any way, shape, or form. My concern is that she is galvanizing some of her supporters, and I stress that some, into hardened positions. And many of them are talking about they felt the Rules Committee session at the Democratic National Committee last weekend wasn't fair. They are harboring a lot of anger and resentment. And in expressing that, they offer very negative comments about Obama personally and about his campaign. And
well,
if this festers all summer long, I think it's going to be hard for Obama to march out of that convention and just 60 days later secure the presidency.
Well, I think you laid out the appropriate scenario, and if I had gone on, I would have echoed, or maybe you would have echoed exactly what I would have said, which is there's a moment, there's a time to suspend the campaign, and it's about now. If not today, then very, very soon, suspend the campaign, go to the convention with the delegates that you have, and then go. And then let there be, you know, do the nominating speeches, do your speech, get it done, go to the vote, Obama wins, and then we all come together around Obama. I think that's the way to do it. I do think that the suspension of the campaign is a very important element mm-hmm. in that process. Could something happen in the intervening period? Well, of course it could, but we don't want that to happen. We want things to we've voted. Every state has voted or had their caucus,
mm-hmm.
and it's clear now that he's got the delegates. Fine, suspend the campaign, but go to the convention without conceding until you get your moment at the convention. State your case, or have your case stated. Go to the vote. Obama wins. Now we're all together.
And John Garamendi, just a final comment. The contrast was really clear to me last night. I felt that Hillary Clinton gave a speech that was aimed at her supporters and was much about her. And I felt that Obama gave a speech that was incredibly generous to Senator Clinton, to the other Democrats who ran, and to some extent to Senator McCain before he dug into him. I think that contrast is really pretty clear to many people. And I'd like to see her move into that more magnanimous and generous mode and recognize that the task now is to defeat the Republicans in the fall, and not just at the presidential level. We need to give the next Democratic president 60 votes in the Senate and a huge margin in the House. And that's not going to happen if the fighting continues at the presidential level all summer.
Well, I don't believe the fighting will continue. I certainly don't believe it should. I think a suspension of the campaign is appropriate. With regard to the nature of the speeches, I've lost, I've won, and in losing, you've got to be generous to the victor. Yes, I think she was, and I think you also need to explain why you went through all of this, and she did. This is a very smart woman. This is a person who knows how important it is that we elect a Democratic president and achieve the goal that you just stated for Congress and the Senate, and she will do that. But she needed last night to put a package, to put a wrap around her campaign, which I think she did effectively, and I think in the future. And when she speaks in the future, she will be speaking in a way that you described as more desirable.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'll look for that, and I certainly hope it comes soon.
Well, I understand the need for it, too.
Well, and I just feel that a lot of people have been bruised, and I understand the passion that's been generated, and I respect the passion, particularly of women who strongly identified with the Clinton candidacy and who feel a loss or even a sense of being gypped. But we need to try to heal some of those bruises, in some cases deep wounds, and really focus on the task ahead. It's it's not going to be easy.
I agree with all of that. I agree the necessity of moving beyond this very spirited campaign. I think both candidates in recent, almost the last month, almost, I guess it's almost 2 months now, have, in their utterances, moved away from attacking each other, moved back to the issues, and rallied their supporters in their individual ways. And so I haven't seen the kind of sharpness that occurred, I don't know, in the February, March, April period. I think the candidates went beyond that, to the credit of both. And now you're in a different period.
I think that's generally true, John, and I do think that the vitriol really is, a lot of it's on the Internet. The bloggers are at loggerheads, and they're angry, bitter, and some of them are downright elite.
Well, yes, that occurs, and they are basically, that their identity is not known, and they're able to do all of this without having to suffer the pains of being known. And I got to tell you, I think some of the talking heads on television are just outrageous on both sides.
Yeah.
Democrat, Republican, Obama, Clinton. I'm going, you know, I've had it with talking heads. When they come on, I go off. I'm not listening anymore to what they have to say.
John Garamendi's with us, California's lieutenant governor. If you have a question or comment, you can call us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. John, as we expected, right-wing Republicans have gathered upwards of 1 million signatures. The Secretary of State has certified an initiative that is a constitutional amendment for this fall's ballot to try to overturn what the Supreme Court did, which overturned the previous initiative, which was not a constitutional amendment, but was an initiative that banned same-sex marriage in the state. The one really positive development in the interim is the field poll shows that likely voters are now at 51%. In support of same-sex marriage. That's up 20 points over the last 15 years, so we're trending in the right direction. But between now and fall, will enough people who do turn out to vote adopt the tolerant pro-civil rights position embracing same-sex marriage, or will division, anger, and differences win out?
I think the former of those two. I think that Californians have moved beyond this. I think Californians think it's no business of the government to tell anybody who they should love and what their relationship can be or should be. And the field poll is one indication. I think even more important than where the numbers are today is the trend line. Californians have become comfortable with people loving whomever they want to love. Leave them alone. Let them do what they want to do in a relationship that hopefully is a happy relationship, but a productive relationship. And in many cases it is. In some cases it's not, both for heterosexual and for homosexual relationships. So, you know, leave them alone and let them have the benefits of the civil rights of being treated as we all should be treated, that is, equally, in whatever relationship we want to have. So I think we're going to see this thing go down to defeat. It will be hot. It will be heavily contested. I do think that the November election, the electorate that turns out in November, is going to be oriented towards younger people, and this is something that Obama will clearly bring to the electorate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very, very clear that the younger you are, the more likely you are to be supporting the same-sex marriage.
Well, and I'm also hopeful with the governor off the center line there. He is, opposing the ballot measure and has accepted the Supreme Court's decision. I hope he will lead other Republicans to join most Democrats in supporting what I think is a basic civil right.
Well, I'll be joining the Republican in an effort to do just that.
Mm-hmm. John Garamendi with us. We're going to take a break and return. If you want to talk with him, lines are open now at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And just a moment ago, Katrina pulled up an online story from ABC News that Senator Clinton is expected to formally drop out of the race this Friday. So, seems to be moving along, John. We'll take a break and be right back on the Peter B. Collins Show. Thank you.
Checking traffic on KRXA. A couple of new problems just rolling in for Watsonville. Highway 129 at Murphy Road. A two-car fender bender looks like it's partially blocking the roadway. CHP just arriving on the scene, but still not letting us know which direction of 129 is affected. Be prepared for heavy traffic there. Carmel Valley, East Carmel Valley Road at Tassajara Road. We have a minivan that smacked the embankment there. Emergency crews on the scene. The good news, just minor injuries with CHP directing traffic to get you around that. And for San Martin, Colombet Avenue at Manning Court, we have a two-car crash. That's just a fender bender off to the side. At the Fishhook, South 17 onto Southbound 1 in Santa Cruz, starting to see some heavy traffic there. And Highway 68 looks good right now. No stalls or accidents to tell you about. This report brought to you by Carfax. Do you know that a flood-damaged car is like a ticking time bomb? Nearly half of these flooded cars get fixed up and resold. Ask your dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. I'm Nate Nix. That's traffic on KRXA.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli, a Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. We're talking with California's Lieutenant Governor, John Garamendi, and we're joined by William from Eureka, listening on KGOE. Hi, William.
Hi, yes, how are you?
Doing okay. What's your comment?
Well, you know, I was raised in an old-fashioned home family environment. Back when I was raised, you know, it was thought that, and pretty much acceptable that gay marriage and gay, you know, being gay and everything was immoral and unacceptable behavior. And now in today's liberal society, it seems that, you know, it's becoming more acceptable and viewed as being a moral thing. And I also...
Well, William, let me just ask you, are you at any risk personally? Do you believe that you're about to fall off a cliff and marry a man?
No, but what I do believe is that children who are raised by parents of gay nature will, I would think, more highly likely, more than not, might become influenced to choose at a young age where they're impressionable and everything, that is the way to go.
Well, William, because, I'm sorry, you're misinformed because...
you're misinformed.
Sexual orientation is not acquired from your parents.
Oh, I don't believe that for a minute.
All right. You're entitled to your misinformed opinion.
You're misinformed because, you know, it's people like you who are so liberal-minded that want to make everybody believe that what you think is moral and everything is actually not.
No, it's tolerance.
You know, I mean, you're talking about men sleeping with men in bed, in the same bed, you know, putting their male counterparts in places where they shouldn't, you know.
Well, you believe that.
Yeah, so you think that's good?
I think it's not my business.
No, so I'm going to ask you, is that good?
I think it's good for them.
Hello, Peter.
Oh, it's good for them.
John,
you know, you are immoral. You know what? You have no values. You have no moral. You are new wave, newfangled way of thinking. That everything is acceptable.
All right. Let's see if the lieutenant governor has a comment, John.
Well, my comment is that he certainly has every right to his own opinion. The facts are different than what he's stating with regard to parental involvement in the life. And Peter, you couldn't be more correct. But let's get on with another question.
All right. Thank you, William. Appreciate your comment today. Now let's talk about, I don't have time to play Libraries, but I know you like that song, about the California budget crisis. And, John, we had an appointment to talk with the new speaker, Karen Bass, the other day, but her schedule got wound up and we didn't end up talking with her. And so far, the only solid idea that I have seen surface from Democrats in Sacramento is from Charles Calderon, which is a proposal to tax pornography. And while I'm not deeply opposed to that, it's not going to fix the budget problems. It's not a comprehensive approach. And you articulated, I think, a good plan last week that first, we take a look at the situation, make cuts where we have to. We try to restructure to reduce costs. And ultimately, if we have to, we have to increase revenues. But I'm not hearing any comprehensive plans come out of the Democrats, and we're already 2 days into 4 days into June, and the budget allegedly should be ready by the end of the month.
I think there's a way of going about this to get the issues properly on the table. First of all, what do we need to do in California to adequately, to well educate our children, and to take care of those who, for any number of reasons, are unable to care for themselves, the aged, blind, disabled, parents that are trying to get off welfare and go to work, those who don't have the ability or the income to buy health insurance or the Medi-Cal budget. What do we need to do to create an innovative, competitive economy so that our kids can compete in the international economic competition when they enter the job market? What do we need to do to be a humane, compassionate, but yet wise and efficient society? When you determine that, that'll give you a number. And then are you able to finance that? And then you begin to debate about new taxes. You begin to debate about the trade-offs that need to be done. I don't think we've entered even the first part of that process. I don't see a proposal from the legislature, a senator or the assembly, that addresses the first question. What do we need to do to educate our kids? How much money do we need? What kind of reforms do we need to put in place? And similarly with the Health and Human Services budget. My take on it is that at the very minimum, the very, very minimum, we should... after all, Peter, we're the seventh wealthiest economy in the world. We should have enough money. In fact, we do have enough money in this economy to provide a quality education for our students and to take care of those. Peter, I'll tell you, I'll share this with you. I'll do it. Well, I won't even do it. I don't have time to do it.
I got 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Well, it's a long story. It's the day before Memorial Day. It's raining like heck in the mountains. I'm at my ranch. I've got to go to the store. I've got to go buy some food for the team that's trying to get the hay in the barn. And outside in the pouring rain is a man in a wheelchair. No legs. His legs are gone. He's in the pouring rain. He has a sign that says, "I need food." I go in. I buy the food for my workers, and I give him some. And I ask him, "Why are you here? Are you on SSI, Supplemental Social Security?" He said, "I was. They cut me off." To go into the reasons why, not important. But here is a man who needs our help just to feed himself, to house, to provide the housing. He obviously had, you're telling me that What the Republicans are telling me is that this seventh wealthiest economy in the world doesn't have enough compassion to provide this guy with enough food to eat.
Yeah.
We're better than that. We're much, much better than that. Similarly, we're the seventh wealthiest economy in the world. We want to continue to be competitive. We've got to educate our kids. We need about $12 billion more revenue than currently available with our current economy and tax system to minimally fund our education system. That is just to meet the cost of inflation plus the new kids that are in school. Similarly with higher education. Yes, reforms are absolutely necessary and have to be added to it. And if we don't have enough money in this economy to make sure that man on the street in the wheelchair in the driving rain doesn't have enough food, then we've got something seriously wrong with our priorities.
Thank you, John. That's very well put. And I hope that that's the message that legislators will keep in mind as they struggle over these issues this summer. We'll talk again real soon. Thank you, John Garamendi. California's Bye-bye. Lieutenant Governor, Democrat John Garamendi. We're going to take a break and return with author Susan Shirk. She's written a book called China, Fragile Superpower. That's next right here. We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, you started the company more than 30 years ago, and was it partly because you were getting headaches from wine?
Absolutely. I'm an extremely chemically sensitive person. There were no wines, no conventionally grown wines that I could really drink and enjoy until I accidentally tasted my grandfather's wine and discovered to my extreme surprise that I could drink those wines without getting headaches. More and more people suffer the results of the accumulation of toxic substances in our environment, and our tolerance is getting really strained, and therefore it takes a very little amount of a toxic substance for them to start have an unpleasant experience.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE. Toll free, that's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B. sent you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. What's going on in the Clinton campaign?
Right now, everybody sees, you know, this is the end game, and how do we get out of this graciously?
Vaughn Verver is a senior political editor at CBSNews.com. The New York Times and other news organizations report that Hillary Clinton will suspend her campaign on Friday and endorse Barack Obama. The Times says Democrats in Congress have urged her to leave and allow the party to coalesce around Obama. As a practical matter, Verver says Clinton staff members need to get on with their lives.
There's a realization this is all over. Everybody's just now sort of trying to figure out how they're getting out of it, not just collectively, but also individually.
Obama and Clinton had a brief conversation today. He's not ready to talk about her or anyone else as a potential running mate.
This is an important decision. It's not one that I take lightly. It's not one that you want to make in the heat of the moment right after you got out of a nomination.
CBS News senior political correspondent Jeff Greenfield says Obama has appointed three people, including Caroline Kennedy, to screen candidates.
One of the people vetting these guys is a fellow named Jim Johnson, used to run Fannie Mae in Washington. He is the quintessential insider. Now, Caroline Kennedy, I think, is meant to symbolize a different kind of approach, maybe reaching unconventional running mates, whether by gender or age or background.
John McCain wants to mix it up right now. He's proposing a series of joint town hall-style debates with Obama before their party's conventions. He wants to do away with
all the gimmicks, the phony sound bites and photo ops, campaigns that always seem to be more about the candidate's interests than the public's. And I hope that Senator Obama agrees.
The Obama campaign says the idea is appealing but suggests a less structured format.
I'm Dan Revive with the findings of a CBS News poll released this evening. Who would get your vote today? Obama has a 6-point lead over McCain in this poll. Democrats were asked, should Obama choose Hillary Clinton as his running mate? 6 out of 10 say yes. And has the length of the nomination fight hurt the Democrats? Members of the party say yes, it has, though almost 4 out of 10 say it has helped the Democrats' chances of winning in November. Dan Revive, CBS News.
Severe thunderstorms hit the Washington area late today.
I couldn't see more than 3 or 4 feet ahead of my truck because of the wall of rain that was coming down.
He was driving through Gaithersburg, Maryland.
It looked like something out of a horror film. I thought I was going to die because my truck was moving sideways.
The wind toppled trees. Hundreds of thousands lost power. At least 2 tornadoes were reported, and 1 person in Northern Virginia was killed. Texas child welfare officials say all the children removed from the Yearning for Zion polygamist ranch have been reunited with their parents now. A judge ordered on Monday that all 440 kids should be returned from foster care. On Wall Street, the Dow 12 points lower at 12,390, the NASDAQ gained 22. This is CBS News.
The world calls us small business owners, but really,
there's nothing small about us. We have big ideas.
We see huge potential. We have
larger-than-life expectations, which is why we
and millions of other business owners use Visa Business.
Because we do business with a great big world and no other card.
No other card.
No other card is more accepted by it.
Visa Business, used for big ideas. Visit visa.com/smallbusiness.
Imagine all the possibilities for your next painting project. Now imagine saving up to 25% too. From June 5th through the 9th, it's a summer savings event at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams Paint Store. Save up to 25% on exceptional Sherwin-Williams paints, stains, wall coverings, and more. But don't wait. Hurry in and save only at Sherwin-Williams for painting, decorating, and great savings. At Sherwin-Williams. For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Not all cars are created equal. Some satisfy their buyers more than others. WWJ Radio's Jeff Gilbert takes a look at the latest ratings.
Porsche again topped J.D. Power's initial quality list, but Nissan's Infiniti brand passed Lexus for number 2. Honda's Fit and Civic took the top quality for small cars, says J.D. Power Vice President Dave Sargent, and he says the big vehicle buyers had a familiar complaint.
We do see quite an uptick in the level of people reporting problems with excessive fuel consumption. As fuel prices go up, there's no reason to believe that this will not continue.
Jeep, which juggled the launch of 3 new vehicles last year, finished at the bottom of the list. Jeff Gilbert, CBS News, Detroit.
It's right there on the surveillance video. At a pawn shop in Salt Lake City, a woman grabs a pair of 14-karat gold bracelets, swallows them, and walks out. Police tracked down 41-year-old Norma Porteous. They say the bracelets, valued at $2,000, have been recovered. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
You know, there's a lot of things you can do with Uncle Sam's stimulus, though. Be a patriot. Go to Advance Auto Parts and get your car right. Hey, don't put it off until your alternator goes bad or battery quits or your brake pads give out. You need your car running right. That's how you get to work, make money, pay bills, buy stuff. If your car doesn't work, neither do you. Advance Auto Parts is on hand, ready to help. So stop on by. Whatever you're working on, Advance will help you keep the wheels turning.
Hi, I'm the owner of an auto body shop, and since we added Aflac to our benefits package at no direct cost to me, all my employees say the same thing. I want
Aflac.
Since we added Aflac, my whole business is running smooth.
Call 1-800-99-AFLAC or go to aflacforbusiness.com. American Family Life Assurance Company of Columbus. Aflac.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, 6 minutes after the hour, and we're heading into the free speech zone this hour. Your calls and comments are welcome, as usual, any topic, any viewpoint from anywhere within the sound of my voice, and you can call in toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And we'll be happy to talk with you about any of the issues we've been discussing today, about the historic clinch of Barack Obama,
And as we discussed with the Lieutenant Governor, it does appear that Hillary Clinton will formally end her campaign this Friday. She wants to do things on her terms, and you know, I've got some issues with that, but after all, she's the candidate, and if it's going to happen this Friday, I suppose that's soon enough for me. Lots of other things we can talk about, too, so feel free to call in. Joining me now is Susan Shirk. She's the author of a book which is called China, Fragile Superpower, published by Oxford University Press last year. And I want to welcome you to the program, Susan. Nice to talk with you.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
You're the director of the UC System-Wide Institute on Global Conflict and Cooperation. Tell us about that.
Well, we like to think of ourselves as the foreign policy voice of the University of California system. We've been around for 25 years, founded by Herb York, who was director of Livermore Laboratory and in the Carter administration did important arms control work. And we're the part of the University of California that brings scientists and social scientists and humanists together to come up with creative ideas how to prevent conflict in the world, how to manage conflict and prevent it from leading to all-out war. And we work closely with Livermore and Los Alamos laboratories as well, which, as you know, are managed in part by the University of California.
Mm-hmm.
We've got an office in D.C. as well as our home base at UC San Diego. And in D.C., we try to bring UC faculty who are doing policy-relevant work on international issues to contribute to the policy debate in Washington.
And tell us about yourself and your interest in China. How long have you been a China watcher?
Well, I started studying Chinese and China as an undergraduate back in the dark ages in the 60s, and I first visited China in 1971.
Wow. Well, then you have been watching for a long time.
Yes, I have.
Well, I want to ask you a few things about current issues, and then I want to talk about an op-ed that you co-authored recently about China and climate change. Of course, since mid-May, China has been responding to a nasty earthquake, almost a 9 on the Richter scale, that hit in Sichuan province. And to some extent, I think we've been following the relief efforts, including the massive undertakings to try to prevent these quake lakes that sprung up because of moving earth from flooding and causing even more damage downstream. It appears that the quake lake that has gotten the most attention has been successfully diverted, and it does seem in many cases that China is more or less absorbing the shock. As many as 100,000 people may have died and more injured. Certainly hundreds of thousands of people displaced, some entire cities of half a million or more completely destroyed. And I just want to know what your take on this is. We have seen news reports over the last few days that those who lost loved ones and who have tried to launch public protests about poor buildings and other conditions that they think led to the catastrophes, that there's been a crackdown by the Chinese government, and they essentially treat them as dissenters as opposed to people who have a heartfelt loss.
Well, I think this is a very tough situation for Beijing. Its response to the earthquake, I think, has been impressively effective, decisive, moved quickly. They were forced to greater transparency of information. I mean, you cannot keep an earthquake secret, right? So they were forced to give a lot more information in the media, in fact, very detailed information. Lots of Chinese ordinary citizens felt moved to try to help in their own ways, and even went out to the area to try to help with the rescue and relief efforts, experiencing what a genuinely free civil society without government restraint felt like for the first time. And, you know, I had hoped that the party leaders might see that, well, it is possible to live with more media openness and more genuine voluntarism from people without the sky falling in, without it really being a direct challenge to your political power, and that this might be sustained. I think it's still too early to say about that,
mm-hmm.
whether or not they're going to go back to business as usual of trying to control things, control the media, demand that all social action be basically controlled by political authorities. So I think it's too early to say. The, of course, the parents who lost children are very, very upset. It does look like the school buildings were, there were a lot of buildings with very shoddy construction. People are upset, not just because the buildings were poorly built, but they believe that it was due to the corruption of local officials who didn't follow the building codes. So, you know, on the one hand, the authorities don't want this to build into a social protest that could really become politically threatening to them. On the other hand, I think they'd like to blame the local officials and show their sympathy with these people, you know, find common cause with them. So it's a tough thing for them.
Do you think that in some ways the Chinese look good because the Burmese look so bad?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it sounds kind of terrible to say this because it is such a tragic event, but it has had some positive repercussions for China because, for one thing, it wiped the Tibet issue off of the front pages. And for another thing, their response was so much more open to the world and more effective than what the Burmese generals were doing that, by contrast, you know, they looked a whole lot better.
Well, and Sharon Stone has lost her opportunity to become an ambassador to China in the next administration, wouldn't you say?
Yes, and, you know, here's an interesting example, because which I think reveals how nervous China's leaders are about their domestic hold on power and whether or not they can maintain Communist Party rule in a society that's been so dramatically transformed by all the market reforms and opening that have occurred over the last 25 years. You know, this thing with Sharon Stone, I mean, why did anyone in the Chinese government have to make any comment at all? You know, but I'm sure what was happening was that the internet in China was burning up with nationalistic critique of Sharon Stone and criticism of the Chinese government somehow for allowing these kinds of insults of China. And the Chinese government is so jittery that they feel they have to react to the nationalist public opinion as it's expressed on the internet in China.
Mm-hmm. Susan Shirk is our guest, a China expert, and she is the author of the book China, Fragile Superpower. And, of course, China is trying to showcase the Summer Olympics in Beijing this year against some of the issues you mentioned, Tibet, human rights in general, and also widespread pollution that many of the athletes are concerned about. How do you think the earthquake response reshapes China's hopes for the Olympics?
Well, on the one hand, of course, it's a huge drain of energy and resources that they probably wish they were being able to put into preparations for the Olympics. On the other hand, I think most of the construction is basically completed. I was in Beijing a short time ago, and it looked like they were basically done, and things are pretty well planned out. It does regain China the sympathy of the international community after it had lost that by the way it reacted to the protests by Tibetans. And so, and all, the other thing it did, of course, was to, the two things together, the two crises of the Tibet protests and the earthquake, did gain them tremendous popular support within China. Which, so they're in a much stronger position from that aspect now. So I think they're in pretty good shape for the Olympics. The only big risk remains the air, the environment. Mm-hmm. I don't anticipate any major protests by Chinese groups at the Olympics. You'll probably have protests from international groups. But what the Chinese really worry about is, you know, threats, domestic threats.
Right.
And I don't think any group will provoke, you know, they would provoke so much resentment from other China.
We're going to take a break and return in just a moment. Susan Shirk is with us. She is the director of the UC System-Wide Institute on Global Conflict and Cooperation, author of China, Fragile Superpower. And if you have a question or comment, you can join us. Next, we're going to talk about China and the climate change issues. 888-5-PETER-B is my toll-free number. That's 1-888-573-8372. The Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way and the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. We know that our children learn by playing, and the caring staff at Thinker Toys will help you choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. Stop by our beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, and the just renovated Thinker Toys at Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
Checking traffic on KRXA and actually pretty busy right now. Thanks to Renee for giving us a call. Big crash in Watsonville, northbound 1 near Salinas Road. One vehicle on the shoulder, another overturned and landed in a ditch. Minor injuries reported. Emergency crews on the scene, and it looks like traffic heavily backed up in both directions. Pajaro Salinas Road at San Juan Road, we have an injury crash. Pickup truck hit a power pole and took it down. It looks like everything's off to the right-hand shoulder. CHP's on the scene. For Ben Lohman, Mountain View Drive at Scenic Way. A lot of wind out there this afternoon. Tree a power pole down, and that's completely blocking the roadway there. Also, Salinas, Old Stage Road at Spence Road, two-car crash. It's got some lanes blocked there, and CHP is on the scene. Highway 17, Santa Cruz Mountains, looks good right now, and this is brought to you by JCPenney. Hurry into JCPenney and get a head start on Father's Day coming up on June 15th. JCPenney is the smart place to shop for all the special dads in your life. I'm Nate Nix. That's traffic on KRXA.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. It's 23 minutes after the hour. We're talking with Professor Susan Schurz from UC San Diego. She is also the system-wide director of UC's Global Conflict and Cooperation Institute and the author of China, Fragile Superpower. And Susan Schurz, you co-authored an op-ed piece that was published recently in the San Francisco Chronicle headlined, China Just Might Surprise the U.S. on Climate Change. Now, the Senate is engaged in debate. Senator Boxer's committee has brought forward a cap-and-trade bill, and it's really getting bogged down, and it doesn't appear that the United States will do anything meaningful until at least 2009. But you point out in this piece that China did ratify Kyoto back in 2002, and, to quote you, China improved energy conservation during the first two decades of its market reform and is now making a new commitment. In 2005, its government pledged that over the next 5 years it would reduce energy use by 20% and its main pollutants by 10%. Now, this is a start, and it's more than the U.S. is doing.
Well, yes, and China's CAFE standards, its auto emission standards, also are better than the U.S. ones for new cars. So, you know, there, China has groups that are resistant to taking difficult steps, and it's, you know, it's got interest groups, it's got its own form of domestic politics, so it's not too easy for them to do it either. It's also important for them that they keep the economy growing, they believe, at over 7% per year, because they don't want massive unemployment, which would lead to social unrest and could be present a political challenge to the regime. And yet, for several reasons, they have taken some significant steps, and those reasons really have to do with the fact that local environmental problems are so severe in China that they are themselves sparking protest activity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And also that China is so now dependent on imported oil, so they have those reasons to try to increase energy efficiency as well. And then they would like to find some positive ways that they can exercise, show that they're a responsible power and exercise leadership in the world. And then finally, as we mentioned in this piece, they're getting ready to have all sorts of green technologies, including clean coal technologies, that they plan to export to the rest of the world and be the technology leader.
Now, tell me about their clean coal technologies, because one of the negatives about China is that it's the fastest growing user of fossil fuels, oil and coal in particular. And what I recently read is that they're building a new coal-fired electric generating plant at the rate of almost one per week. But if those plants are using new cleaner technology, that could be helpful.
Yeah, most of them aren't yet. This is kind of an uphill struggle because the Chinese economy is so dependent on coal, and that's the fuel that they have large reserves of. And that's why it really does make sense for them to try to develop clean coal technologies that are commercially, you know, priced, that they're won't break the bank, and that companies can actually adopt. So they're working very hard on that, and there is one experimental plant that involves carbon capture and sequestration that they are doing, working on together with the Australians, that they were hoping to open outside of Beijing even before the Olympics.
Mm-hmm. And what is your sense overall about the tension that we feel here and that has to be felt in China between the what's seen as a trade-off of economic growth and dealing with climate change by clamping down on carbon emissions? Are they prepared to make trade-offs, or do you think that they want to kind of mollify the world while they continue a very aggressive economic growth plan?
Well, I think they first and foremost want to address their domestic environmental problems. And so if they can do that in a way that also contributes to global climate change mitigation, then that's something that they would be seriously interested in. They also obviously there's no groundswell of demand for aggressive efforts to reduce carbon emissions in China. That's not an issue that really is in the forefront of people's demands on government yet in China. But I think there are reasons why they make...
It's just the music. Time for us to go. Thank you very much, Professor. That's Susan Shirk at UC San Diego. You can check out her book, China, Fragile Superpower. We're going to continue in the Free Speech Zone right here.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hey, this is Larry from Acme Coffee, and if, like me, you own a business and are tired of waiting through aggressive sales reps pushing you to advertise on mediocre network TV stations or stale radio broadcasters, contact KRXA 540 sales manager Larry Rathall at 394-5792. AM 540's committed listener base will help you grow your business. I know, because they're helping me grow mine. Call Larry at 394-KRXA.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. To experience one-of-a-kind dishes, don't forget the weekly specials. The Mexicali Grill is open Monday through Saturday for lunch until 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli, with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Ever thought about shipping your child to a remote island? Want to send them to their room for the rest of their life? I can help. I'm Mark Lecluse, an intern psychotherapist practicing in SoCal under the supervision of Dr. Chaim Barton. For the past 10 years, I've been helping parents, teens, and kids overcome challenges in their lives, and I'd like to help you too. I can work with your family to resolve conflicts, improve communications, and solve problems. Together, we can turn struggles and challenges into opportunities for growth and connection. I offer an affordable sliding scale and am currently accepting new clients. Please call for an appointment. 831-818-4033. Parenting doesn't have to be so hard. I'm Mark LaCluse. Give me a call. 818-4033. That's 818-4033.
This is Solazar.
Hi, I'm Carolani.
Join us this Sunday at 6 p.m. for Good Vibrations, Tools for Transformation.
Together, we'll transform your relationships, communication, health, and the ability to reach your goals and dreams.
Good Vibrations, Sunday at 6 p.m. on AM 540 KRXA.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's the free speech show. Give me a call. Let me know what's on your mind. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. Seeking an answer to Bruce Springsteen's question there, who will be the last to die for Bush's mistake? You heard Vincent Bugliosi on the program today, the guy who locked up Charles Manson, and he's quite a character. Egotistical is, it only approaches a description. But he's onto something here. He's a man with a brilliant legal mind, who is unafraid to confront the truth. And the truth is that Bush lied to us. And that led us into Iraq. As he points out, 4,000 plus Americans have died there, and he builds a case for prosecuting Bush for murder. And I ask the question, with Barack Obama now certain to be the Democratic nominee, will he push for full accountability of the crimes of the prior administration? It's one of the things I'm very concerned about. On one hand, he has talked about holding them accountable. On the other hand, he seems so interested in this post-partisanship and moving forward that he might do what Bill Clinton did when he got to Washington, which was to flush away the sins of George H.W. Bush and his cronies. So I'd like to hear your thoughts about that today, because I think Bugliosi is right on track. Will it happen? I don't know. He doesn't know. But he certainly has built the case. And as he said on the program earlier, there are thousands of prosecutors, including the 93 U.S. attorneys, the U.S. Attorney General, and district attorneys across the United States who could read his book, find a cause for action, and file it against George W. Bush. So let me know your thoughts about that. And I also want to know your thoughts about healing the Democratic Party. We had a good conversation with Clinton supporter John Garamendi last hour. And as we concluded it, I got the news that ABC is reporting that Hillary Clinton will formally withdraw on Friday. Now, we don't know the terms of that, whether she will release her delegates or go for the moment in the spotlight at the convention in Denver in August. And I don't have a problem with that moment in the spotlight. What I do have a problem with is the hardening of Clinton supporters who are so angry, so resentful,
and so disappointed that their sense of entitlement has been rejected. And I want to take a moment here. We'll go to your calls. If you're on the line, hold there. We'll get to you in a minute or two. But I get daily emails from a woman named Carolyn Kay, and she used to work on Capitol Hill, and she runs a website, you can visit it yourself, called MakeThemAccountable.com. And she's done a lot of great work over the years, and I've been troubled by the tone of her daily dispatches over the last few months, because she is a very angry, and I will use the word advisedly, bitter Clinton supporter. So today she's posted an open letter to Hillary Clinton, and I'll read parts of it to you. Senator Clinton, first, thank you, says Carolyn. Your steadfastness, your courage, your grace have been an inspiration to me, even though I was not originally a supporter of yours. I have an idea I want to share with you about what you can do going forward that could possibly end up giving you more power to affect the kind of change you want to make in this country than you could ever have in elected office, perhaps even the office of president. First, pleads Carolyn Kay, don't drop out of the race. Anything can happen between now and August, including the chance that the Republicans might jump the gun on their Oppo research and Obama's negative ratings rise so high that even the Kool-Aid drinkers among the superdelegates would have to pay attention. Leave the option open to challenge the DNC's unfair and possibly illegal handling of the delegates from Michigan and Florida. Now, let me pause here for some editorial comments. Listen to the loaded language here. She presumes that the Republicans have kryptonite that can destroy Obama's hope to become Superman. And she writes, the Kool-Aid drinkers among the superdelegates. Who's she referring to? Those who have supported Barack Obama either initially or who have converted after initially supporting Senator Clinton. Kool-Aid drinkers? What does that mean? That is such an ugly description of people who support Obama, and it suggests that they are dumber than the followers of Jim Jones. That's the Kool-Aid reference. And that they would drink the Kool-Aid even if it meant following their leader to death. Then Carolyn goes on, leave the option open to challenge the DNC's unfair and possibly illegal handling of the delegates from Michigan and Florida. Now, I've seen previous comments that Carolyn has written about this, and she only looks at a very rosy and favorable interpretation pro-Clinton. She doesn't acknowledge the history of why Florida and Michigan were sanctioned. She doesn't acknowledge that Obama got squeezed out because he thought he was playing by the new rules and didn't put his name on the ballot in Michigan. And now she is describing that as a theft from Hillary Clinton. All right, the letter to Clinton goes on here from Carolyn Kay. She says, second, even if it's offered, don't accept a vice presidency. I don't think it'll be offered because there seems to be some inexplicable but visceral hatred of you and President Clinton in the Obama camp. Even if it is offered, it would be used as a way to marginalize you, and I don't want that to happen. Again, Carolyn, here you say visceral hatred of you and President Clinton in the Obama camp. I feel the hatred coming from the other direction. I don't hear that many Obama supporters, and I'm not saying there aren't some in the blogosphere or in the world at large, who haven't been unfairly or misogynistically critical of Hillary Clinton. I acknowledge that. But to offer this sweeping criticism of the so-called Obama camp and describe it as visceral hatred, I think says more about the writer than who she's writing about. One more paragraph here from Carolyn Kay in her open letter to Hillary Clinton. Third, you're in a position to harness the voting, lobbying, and donation power of 17 million people to force real change that I see coming, more real change than I see coming from the so-called change candidate. Many of us are very angry at how you've been treated, and you could use that anger to build a grassroots organization that could rival Move On in size and influence. I would be very proud to help you build such an organization. Well, Carolyn Kay and Hillary Clinton, I encourage you to build an organization. Anything you want to do is fine with me if it's legal and ethical. But don't build it on anger, because that will not produce long-term benefits to the Democratic Party or to our country. And what we need to do is move beyond the anger and move to the next stage here, which is acceptance. Are you ready, Clinton supporters to accept that she lost and that Barack Obama will be the nominee of the Democratic Party this fall.
Barack Obama has a funny name. Barack Obama has a funny name. His name's Barack Obama. That's right, Obama. Sounds like Osama. I'm just the 147 millionth person to obey that idiotic point. And his middle name, and his middle name's Hussein. Hussein, not Saddam, but Obama. When he was a kid, he smoked a joint, and he inhaled. He smoked a joint, and inhaled. That was the point. He also did cocaine. His middle name's Hussein. He wants to be the POTUS. And I wonder if you noticed that Barack Hussein Obama has a funny name.
That's Roy Zimmerman's cute little etude for Barack Obama. And I'd like to hear from you about these issues. 888-5 Peter B is my toll-free number. That's 888-573-8372. We've got June in Carmel Valley. Hi, June. Welcome to the Free Speech Zone on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hello, Peter B. I'm a frequent listener and first-time caller.
Well, congratulations. You broke through the fear and whatever else it is that prevents people from calling.
Yes. I was on hold for a long time last hour when Mr. Bugliosi was your guest.
Uh-huh.
And I really wanted to tell him something, and I'm looking forward to reading his book. Mm-hmm. I was hoping to get a free book, but
oh, I'm sorry. I only had two to give
now I'll have
away.
To buy one.
Okay.
Anyway, Mr. Bugliosi, I think, first of all, I wanted to thank him for taking this courageous action against George Bush. And I wanted to suggest to him an excellent witness for his prosecution of George Bush.
And who would that be?
That would be Dr. David Ray Griffin.
Oh, yeah. That's a great idea.
And for those that don't know, Dr. David Ray Griffin is a prominent authority surrounding the events of September 11th, which preceded our illegal military actions in Afghanistan and Iraq.
That's right. And, in fact, he will be a guest on our program 1 week from today.
Oh, excellent.
And I'm going to be off most of next week, just so people aren't surprised and don't think Karl Rove had me, stuffed in a trunk somewhere. But I'm going to take a few days off, and I'm going to be in the Midwest. But I'm taking the
opportunity.
You okay there?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm going to be originating from my hometown of Cincinnati next Wednesday. That's June 11th. Because it's behind the Republican Red Curtain and also the Cincinnati Reds Curtain. And we're going to talk with people like Paul Hackett, an Iraq veteran who ran for Congress and the Senate in Ohio and came up short. And we also will be talking with David Ray Griffin for an hour. And he is scheduled to be with us during the second hour of the show, which is 4 to 5 o'clock Pacific time. So if you make a note, that's a week from today, next Wednesday, the 11th of June. Yeah, I got that right. And that'll be from 4 to 5 o'clock Pacific. And
excellent.
We'll be talking about Dr. Griffin's new book about 9/11 contradictions. I'm about halfway through it, and it's fascinating because he painstakingly, once again, what is this, his fifth volume on 9/11?
I think it's his eighth.
Oh, boy. I've read as many of them as I can. But he just lays out painstakingly from the record and from the official timelines that were delivered to us at various times the inconsistencies and the outright direct contradictions that are in the 9/11 Commission's report that has been widely accepted by the media. And his book is an open letter to the media and to our political leaders to simply look at these contradictions and open a new and fair and unfettered investigation into the events of 9/11. I'm convinced, June, that we don't know the truth, and we deserve to.
I absolutely agree, and I just wanted to give a plug to an event, two events that are going on in the Monterey Bay Area. On Dr. David Ray Griffin will be appearing in Monterey on Saturday, June 28th, at the Center for Spiritual Living.
Okay.
And that's at 7 p.m. That's downtown Monterey, Franklin and Pacific Streets.
Mm-hmm.
And we're hoping to have a huge crowd there. And then on Sunday night, he'll be appearing in Santa Cruz on June 29th.
Okay.
And he'll be discussing his latest book, 9/11 Contradictions.
Great. So Monterey the 28th, Santa Cruz the 29th. June, thank you for updating us on that. We're going to take a break and return to more of your phone calls in the Free Speech Zone. You want to join in? You can. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Checking traffic on KRXA. A pair of problems for Highway 1, Rio Del Mar. Northbound 1 before Freedom Boulevard. Solo spin out. Looks like all the activity in the center divide. Also northbound 1 at Salinas Road in Watsonville. An accident where a vehicle went off the roadway and flipped onto its side into a ditch. Emergency crews on the scene, and you have heavy traffic for about a mile in both directions approaching the scene. Ben Lomond, Mountain View Drive at Scenic Way. Tree fell down. Took a power pole with it. That's completely blocking the roadway. And a pair of Salinas City Streets crashes. Spence Road at Old Stage Road. Two cars and that's in the right lane. And Las Palmas Parkway at River Road getting reports of a solo vehicle crash. CHP's on the way. This is brought to you by Carfax. Do you know a new study from Carfax shows that the number of salvaged cars for sale in the United States has more than doubled? Ask your used car dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. Have a great night. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
Fruited di Mar Grill in Marina is a delicious haven for lovers of Italian seafood, pasta, and salads at neighborly prices. Owners Tito and Sonia Perez invite you to their new restaurant, Fruited di Mar Grill, for lunch or dinner weekdays and on Saturdays from 4 p.m. Every tasty meal comes with generous portions of Salvadoran warmth. Fruited di Mar Grill is at 3056 Del Monte Boulevard in friendly Marina. Browse to fruiteddimargrill.com or call 384-8525.
This is Bob Oliver. Join me and my guests as we take a look at the lies of George W. Bush. Saturday, 9 p.m. on KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
What was the first thing that went through your head when you heard that a plane crashed into the city?
Well, I was sitting in a schoolhouse in Florida. I'd gone down to tell my little brother what to do, and just kidding, Jeff. And it's the mother in there. Anyway, I was sitting there, and my chief of staff. Well, first of all, when he walked in the classroom, I had seen this plane fly into the first building. There was a TV set on, and you know, I thought it was Tyler there.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm your humble host, Peter B. It's 9 minutes in front of the hour. We're in the Free Speech Zone, and you can call me toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And tomorrow, Peter Laufer will be sitting in for me. He is a radio talk show host who is co-host of the Washington Monthly Radio Show, and he'll be here talking about a recent book that he co-authored with Marcos Kounoulakis. Together they co-host that Washington Monthly Radio Show. And he's got some other topics, I think, in store for you, so be kind to him and give him lots of phone calls and lots of love. Then Friday, we will be originating live from Minneapolis at the scene of the National Conference on Media Reform. A lot of great people are going to be trolling through there, and we're going to talk to as many of them as we possibly can.
Katrina has been working on lining up a tremendous array of people committed to media reform. And we're also going to have a special live broadcast on San Francisco's Green 960, Saturday from 1 to 2 Pacific time. That, too, will be live from Minneapolis at the National Conference on Media Reform. And just quickly, next week, Brad Friedman will sit in every day for me, except when I'm in Cincinnati, and I'll do that live show with Paul Hackett and Dr. David Ray Griffin, and that will be on Wednesday next week. You got all that? All right, I hope so. Let's see who's next on the line here. It's line two, and Katrina, we need to scroll down a little bit so I can see exactly. It's Scott in Monterey. Thanks for calling, Scott.
Yeah, hi, Peter. I was going to talk about one thing about the China deal, but I was thinking about Barack Obama. Why? I think the perfect candidate for Barack Obama would be Caroline Kennedy, which is one of the persons that he's thinking of, the three people. And wouldn't that suffice the women that have been shunned by not getting Hillary in elected?
Well, I don't know. First of all, you're the first to mention to me the name Caroline Kennedy as a potential vice presidential candidate, and I find that quite a stretch, Scott. She has no political experience. She has a name. And given the challenges that Obama is already facing from McCain about his relative inexperience in foreign policy, I don't think that makes McCain wiser, but McCain does. I don't think that they would go in that direction. I think they may seek a governor, like Kathleen Sebelius of Kansas has been discussed as a potential candidate. And as a woman, that might attract many of the same supporters as Senator Clinton. But it's really hard to peg at this point. And it's one of the reasons why I'm hoping that Hillary Clinton will go through, as we've heard, and withdraw on Friday. Because we need to stop pretending that there's still a choice. The choice has been made. And to prolong that in some form that might enhance Hillary Clinton's ego or her prospective power in the future at the expense not only of Obama as the presidential candidate, but of other Democrats, including many progressives, who are running for Congress and for the Senate this year. We need to, in my view, give them the oxygen, the campaign cash, and the media attention that has been largely diverted into this protracted presidential primary.
Exactly. Well, you know, that's one thing I was thinking about. But my main concern why I called is the lady was on before about China, and there's actually is a disease it's a parasite called Morgellons disease that basically is coming from, I believe, China, and it's from the coal industry. There's parasites that live in the upper atmosphere, and these parasites get weighted down with the coal being up in the air, and then these parasites land on the people, on the animals' net. They bring it to the factories, and they produce products, and it sends it to us. I know one thing is because I've seen it on every single piece of clear tape, like 3M Scotch tape. You see these parasites on closed containers, and it says "Made in China," and it's something we have to be looking at.
Wow. Well, Scott, you're bringing me all kinds of things I've never heard of.
Yeah, it's called Morgellons, Morgellons.
All right, well, we'll look into that, and I appreciate you bringing it to our attention. I just want to underscore, I'm not skeptical of what you're saying. I'm just telling you that you've got information, and I'm glad you brought it forward.
Yeah, because I have it.
You have this?
Yeah, I actually have it, and I got it by ingesting clear tape because I used to make little signs up, and I would tear the tape off with my mouth, and then I found out, where am I getting this from? So then I started checking out, then I came to that it was on the clear tape, and it was completely sealed from China.
Wow.
Yeah, I've got a little microscope, a 100 times microscope that I checked it all out.
Yeah.
And they're there. They're actually there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, if you would care to send me an email with details about this and any websites where I could get more information, piqued my curiosity.
Scott. All right. Well, thank you.
You got my email? It's peter@peterbcollins.com.
Great. Thank you.
And
very
I don't
much.
Want any of that sticky tape from China on there. And what's the cure, by the way, Scott?
Well, I tell you, with the cure I'm using, I am being very aggressive. I have a thing that a doctor down in Mexico uses called a zapper, and it's an electric, it's a pathogen frequency, and you put these electrodes on your body, two of them, and then you turn the zapper on, and it basically zaps these parasites where there's no other drug. I've been taking a lot of drugs, and there's no other these drugs that will do it, but this Zapper actually does it, and I do other kind of mud baths and essential oils and all sorts of stuff. But this Zapper, that's actually it's called it's a drclark.com, and she actually is down in Mexico. And I understand that the FDA is after her. She has three houses down there, and there's helicopters trying to locate her because she actually has books out there. These Zapper and these products that she has actually can cure all diseases. It can cure everything.
Oh, wow. And I want a Zapper incredible. Like that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Scott, thank you very much. And Abut, where are you from in Canada?
Calgary.
Okay. Thank you. Great
all
to hear from you today.
I'll go back to the hockey game.
Okay.
I think
okay.
Detroit's ahead by one.
We go to Gene now in Salinas. Welcome, Gene. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi.
Hi, I just got 1 minute. What's on your mind?
Oh, I recently heard about this disease just in the past few days from some other source.
Really?
Yeah, and it's pretty bad stuff. I think that we should stop and consider, do you believe that Obama would be hired to run GE or would be capable of running it? We don't have I don't think the slightest idea of just how big a job the President of the United States is.
So you want him to practice at a corporation first? I mean, John McCain's never run a corporation. He's never run a business.
He's just collected money from his wife's beer distributorship. I didn't say that.
No, you didn't. I didn't say you said it. Gene, thanks for your call today. I'm out of time, and Trigger's here to ride me off into the sunset. Thanks for listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
To you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares?
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader, from Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor. You name them, they're in my book.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Hillary Clinton is ready to bow out on Saturday, reportedly under pressure from Democrats in Congress who want a clear path for Barack Obama. CBS News correspondent Dan Revive has the official line.
Her campaign officials say for the sake of party unity, she'll express support for Barack Obama at an event in Washington. But they're not calling it a formal end or even a suspension of her campaign. That may be in part for the sake of fundraising. The Clinton campaign has millions in debt still to pay.
Obama says he's not ruling Clinton in or out as a running mate. CBS News correspondent Dean Reynolds reports he's just starting the formal selection process.
There's now a panel to address the Obama running mate question, made up of Washington businessman Jim Johnson, former Deputy Attorney General Eric Holder, and Caroline Kennedy, daughter of the 35th president. They've been getting lots of advice, according to campaign aides. Former President Carter, for one, made his views on an Obama-Clinton combo crystal clear.
I think it'd be the worst mistake that could be made.
But Obama seems in no hurry to pick a partner.
He says he wants to think this thing through. In the meantime, John McCain wants him to think about a series of town hall-style debates where they'd stand side by side and take questions from an audience.
Just two Americans running for the highest office in the greatest nation on earth.
The Obama campaign calls the proposal appealing. Sarah Dutton of our survey unit has the results of the latest CBS News poll.
If the general election were held today, 48% of registered voters say they would vote for Barack Obama, 42% would choose John McCain, 6% are undecided, 3% say they won't vote.
6 in 10 Democrats say Obama should make Clinton his running mate. The price of crude oil fell another $2 today, settling at $122.30. U.S. inventories are rising as demand declines. And CBS News business reporter Alexis Christopher says demand overseas is also expected to fall.
There's a lot of demand for oil from developing nations, from growing nations like India and China. But this latest move now by India to cut fuel subsidies and effectively raise retail oil prices means that we're going to see a drop in demand from India, which is one of the biggest consumers of